Before we get to today's podcast, talking with Wendell Holland, winner of Survivor Ghost Island, I want to take a moment and thank one of our sponsors here today, and those are our friends over at Filter Easy, brand new sponsor of Rob as a Podcast. Filter Easy is the super convenient subscription service that makes it impossible to forget to change the air filters in your home. Filters arrive at your front door when you need to change them. It's that simple. You can outsmart your chore list by subscribing to Filter Easy and sign up for just under 5 minutes on your computer or mobile phone to sign up. All you need to do is how many air filters your home needs. We've got a great offer for you. As a listener to this podcast, you can receive your first order for free by going to filtereasy.com or by calling the number 1-855-910-EASY and use the offer code ROB to get your first order for free at filtereasy.com. A lot of homeowners and renters forget to change their air filters regularly. If you have allergy sufferers like you do at my house, it's a very important thing. Homeowners and renters often don't know how often to change their home air filters. It's recommended you change your home air filter every 1 to 3 months. And if you have pets, you should do it even more because poor indoor air quality is a considerable health risk. The EPA ranks poor indoor air quality as one of the top 5 baby environmental health risks. In fact, indoor air can be 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air. Routine replacement of home air filters is one of the primary means to improve indoor air quality. So do yourself and your family a favor this summer. You're getting the air conditioning on. You want to make sure that you're taking care of the air in your home. We've got the Super Allergen air filter from Filter Easy, and it's working like a charm. Filter Easy is that convenient subscription service for something you need versus most other subscription boxes. It's super practical and a no-brainer solution. So check out a subscription to Filter Easy. Get your first order for free when you go to filtereasy.com or by calling 1-855-910-EASY. That's 855-910-3279 and use the promo code ROB. Sign up today at filtereasy.com. Get your first order for free, filtereasy.com or call 1-855-910-EASY. Make sure to use the promo code ROB. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with another Survivor long form interview podcast. Today we're going to be checking in with the winner of Survivor Ghost Island. Very excited to talk with Wendell Holland II here today on the show. I really enjoyed these last couple of weeks of how we've gone through. We started off talking with Kellen around Memorial Day. And the next week we talked to Dominic. And then this past Monday, I posted the interview with Laurel. And now here we are. I would have liked to have spaced it out and had Wendell kick off the start of next week, but we're going to get into the Big Brother cast release. So I want to make sure that we give this Wendell interview its own lane here and some time to breathe before we start to get into talking about Big Brother stuff. So that's why it's here at the end of this week. If you missed any of those interviews, I highly recommend that you go back and check them out. Plus the Survivor podcast. Everybody's talking about Survivor loved ones. I think that all of this stuff is great summer listening, even if it's a couple of weeks from now and you're sitting by a pool or you're on vacation. Go to that Survivor podcast feed, robisawebsite.com/survivor. They'll probably be easier to find there than in our main feed, robisawebsite.com/iTunes. And if you're looking for something, you know, these long podcasts that I've been doing these last couple of weeks, I highly recommend that you check them out. Before we get to Wendell coming up, I need to thank one more sponsor and then we're not going to take a break the rest of the way. I promise. I need to tell you about what's going on with BlueApron.com. Blue Apron's been a sponsor with us for a long time. You know all about Blue Apron. Blue Apron delivers farm fresh ingredients and step-by-step recipes to your door. Of course, they've got two-person plans, family plans, a wine plan now. Blue Apron's been a sponsor with us for a long time here on the podcast. Blue Apron is helping you skip the meal planning and get straight to the cooking with Blue Apron. You can enjoy unforgettable meals inspired by the vibrant cooking of the Mediterranean, like seared salmon and spicy orange salsa, centered around fruits, vegetables, lean meats, and plenty of olive oil. These recipes are deliciously nutritious. Blue Apron has a great variety and recipes for any particular taste that you have with a flexible meal plan. And you you go on the website and you pick out what you want. And of course, they only have the highest quality ingredients that they're going to send you. Never GMO and no meat with the added hormones that Nicole and I do not get a chance to go out to restaurants very often. But the great thing about Blue Apron is that when it's a Blue Apron night, it's just a little bit special because we can put those kids to bed and we can sit down and we can have a nice home cooked meal together that's not going to be too heavy. You're not going to feel disgusting like when you get this takeout. Blue Apron is the perfect cure for any boring weeknight because Blue Apron has a team of professional chefs putting a lot of care into creating the recipes each week. They send you this meal card that is going to make you feel like you really know what you're doing in the kitchen, even if you don't. So go ahead and check out this menu. By the way, Blue Apron is working with Chrissy Teigen. Everybody loves her. Garlic and soy glazed shrimp and charred broccoli and hot green pepper sauce. Spicy penne pasta. Oh, no, that's penne pasta with zucchini and capers. Of course, you're going to get those first three meals for free at blueapron.com/Rob. That's blueapron.com/Rob to get your first three meals for free. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook. All right, everybody. I am thrilled to bring in our guest today. We've heard from a bunch of the Ghost Island players, but now it's time to hear from the Ghost Island winner. Please welcome to the podcast the great Wendell Holland the second. Wendell, how are you?
Hey, Rob, I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
Okay, very excited to get into everything. You know, we've had so much that we have been going through from the season, and now I am very excited to finally get to hear your take on all of this.
I'm excited to be here.
All right, Wendell, since you won the game, what have you been up to? I see pictures of you all over the place. What's been going on?
Man, I've just been traveling a little bit, trying to do as much press and media and interviews as I can, and just trying to, I guess, ride this wave, enjoy this time. I'm very appreciative of, you know, the last couple weeks, so just trying to enjoy it right now.
Okay. All right. And now, are you finally back home?
At this particular moment, for the last 2 hours, I have been back home. Yes, I'm in Philly.
Okay, good. Well, thank you for making some time to talk to us about all of this. Give us a taste for, you know, the rest of us who've never won Survivor. What has this felt like the last couple of weeks?
It's been kind of exhausting, man. Like early mornings, late afternoon and evenings, and just like, I'm just doing a lot. I feel spread kind of thin because I'm still running my business. I still want to give my family all the time I can, play some basketball, work out here and there. But I also have this other element, the fact that I won and the fact that news outlets and people and newspapers and what have you have been reaching out to me to do interviews and stuff. So I am trying to, I need to, you know, really manage my time a lot better now, but it's been an amazing, crazy ride, you know, for the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
What's been the craziest part of all this with you as going from somebody who just watched this show to now, you know, coming off of it and now being out there as the winner of the show?
Yeah, it's, I guess people are starting to recognize me a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I get, you know, noticed on the street sometimes here and there, or like I'll be walking around the supermarket and I'll get looks and people will come up and want to take photos with me. And, you know, I'd never been that guy. I like to kind of stick to myself a little bit, but now that I have a more public profile, I think that, you know, it's a good and a bad thing, but that's where things have changed. It's like now people know me.
So go back to how you ended up on the show. I know that we saw a little bit of your audition tape. I know you've been watching for, what, a good 10 years or so. But I'm always interested in somebody who sort of comes in around the middle of Survivor. How did you end up finding the show and becoming a fan of it?
Okay, the way I found the show, obviously, as a lot of people know, I went to Morehouse College in Atlanta, and during new student orientation, there was a guy who spoke, who was a Morehouse alum by the name of Sean King. And he spoke to, you know, the 1,000 freshmen of us. And he was this amazing motivational speaker. So I was like, this guy is someone that I kind of want to look up to and whatnot. So I found him on Facebook and I would follow him on Facebook. And there was a time, I think I was in law school or something like that. And Sean King posted on his, you know, Facebook, it was like, Survivor's in its 18th season or 17th season, and I can't believe me and my family still watch it. It's such a great show. I'm like, well, if Sean King can enjoy this show, then maybe I should start watching it. So that's actually how I started watching it, from a random Sean King post. And I've loved it ever since.
Have you kept in touch with Sean King, and has he reached out?
Well, he's kind of big time now. He's like,
is it the same Sean King who is a writer?
A writer, okay. And a civil rights activist.
Yes, yes. So, he writes for the New York Daily News.
Yes, yes. So I think he might have, we sent each other a couple messages more recently. Mm-hmm. And I just reminded him, I was like, dude, you're the reason why I started watching this show. You know, you're my big Morehouse bro. And I appreciate you for even writing that message. And he was like, yeah, me and my family have been a big fan of yours this whole season. Congratulations. And that was it. But so, yeah, he knows that he was the reason why I started watching.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. We know that you made this big life change also, where you went to law school and then you ultimately decided to pursue making furniture and starting your own business. How simultaneous was that with you wanting to apply to be on Survivor?
Okay. Well, I actually started applying while I was working in the court system. So mm-hmm. after law school, like the next few years, I don't think I applied during law school because I was, you know, trying to get out of law school. But the next few years, I was clerking for a few different judges and I sent in some tapes or some, you know, videos around that time. And I guess somewhere in late 2015, my last judge retired and I really started selling furniture, and that was, you know, that was the time for the career shift. And that's when I started really being myself and showing my personality and just loving life a lot more than I had been. And I think that at that point, the producers saw something in me or in my videos and they were like, yo, this is the Wendell that we want. This guy right here with the fro and the beard that is willing to, you know, say whatever and is a good guy and can do all these things. This is who we need out there.
Now, something that's very unusual about you is that you were a consensus pick among several key production members from the start of the game in Jeff Probst and Matt Van Wagenen. Both, it's well documented. They picked you that you were going to be the winner before the start of the season. And usually these guys, you know, with all due respect, have not exactly been on the money with their picks. How does that make you feel to know that not only did you win, but also that these people had faith that you would be the winner before the season even started?
It felt good to hear that I was their pick.
Because you didn't know, obviously, until after the season had aired.
I had no idea. That's the thing. It's like, I didn't know going in, and I'm kind of glad I didn't know any of this. They didn't treat me any special way or anything. I didn't know if Probst even liked me, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was just super happy to be out there. And then for the season to go how it did and end in a tie, and for, you know, Laurel to be the tie-breaking vote, and for me to have to hold that information for months and months and months, and then before our season airs, for me to learn that I was their pick, it was just like, man, I had no idea. I'm glad they didn't tell me, because I might have played a little different of a game or something. I was just, yeah. So it was great to hear, and it was great to hear, man.
Yeah, I think it just speaks to, you know, it's a sort of a confirmation bias, I think, in that, you know, your personality was such an effective weapon for you that you were able to even charm people going into the game, that they had the confidence to pick you as a winner.
Yeah, I think that it was kind of like the same thing, because Probst said he had to fight for me to even get through, because there was some backlash at some point. So I think it was me showing Probst something about my personality, or I tend to come off genuine to people. I can connect with people pretty well. So I think they both saw that. And I think they thought that amongst the other personalities. We had some over the top personalities. We had some super strong people amongst this group of, you know, crazy folks. I think they were like, you know what? Wendell is kind of level headed and people kind of like him. And that might bode well for him in this game.
Now, you talked a bit about Jeremy going into the game. What was it that you saw from Jeremy that you wanted to emulate?
In Jeremy's game, especially Second Chances, he seemed super grounded. He always thought about Val. He always thought about his family. And he was a strong player and he was a threat. But it's like his heart stayed in the right place out there. And to me, it seemed like it was his family that kept him grounded. And when I went out there, I was like, that's kind of what I want to do. I don't want to forget what I have back home. And I want to play for those people. And I want to set the proper example for the people watching me. But I still want to play a very, very strong game. And that, you know, he played an amazing game. That's my favorite player. Mm-hmm. And, you know, why not emulate your game after someone like that?
He's a good pick. He's a good pick. So let's get into where you started in this game. And, you know, I have a lot of questions about the very start of the game at Navidi, because you guys come back from this challenge and Dominic has upset Chris Noble. And you're sort of getting this information from the one side where Chris and Sebastian, they don't like Dominic. And you kind of stick your neck out for him in the early days of the game and give him a heads up that people are talking about him. What was it that you saw in Dominic early on? Because you're talking about him in the first episode and you're talking about how much you like him and how much you would like to keep him around.
Yeah, I think that at that point, it was more so me just not disliking him. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't have a problem with this guy. And early on, I think people told you at Navidi, there was kind of like a 5-5 split from the beginning. It was Bradley, myself, Kellen, Dominic, and Morgan. And then the other five, Chris Noble, Sebastian, Dez, Chelsea, and Angela. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's that kind of a split so early, or if you're kind of seeing the people that you want to work with, and he happens to be within that five, if you hear something from the other people that is kind of like an attack on your crew, that's kind of like an attack on you. So when I heard Sebastian saying his name, I actually heard Angela saying his name early too. And I wanted to let Dom know, hey, your name's being brought up, but you're with the crew. We got you. Mm-hmm. And Dom did his thing and went searching for idols. And, you know, he did his thing after that with that information. But there was a 5-5 split from the beginning.
Was there any part of you that was thinking maybe you should either cut bait or just let him go? Because from what it sounds like, it seems like that you always had a lot of connections with the core Navidi, where you might have been able to get something else going with the other people that were in that starting tribe.
Yeah, I think had I let Dom go early, I'm not sure, you never know 100%, but I think my connections could have been strong with other people. But I thought that, you know, me and Dom being kind of older guys on the tribe and Northeasterners and whatnot, I felt like we had a good handle of the game and we kind of understood things and we had a good, war chest of life experience that we brought into the game, while other people, you know, are young and think they could do no wrong. And, you know, that can lead to people getting blindsided and whatnot. Whereas I've taken losses in my life, and I'm sure, and Dom has certainly taken losses. Like, losses humble you. And I feel like being a little older, a little wiser would help my game. And I think definitely his game, and allowed us to work together and get far.
Were you hesitant at all when you were, you know, establishing such a close relationship with him early on, and, you know, he's got everything going on with the idols? And were you worried that it could end up turning into a situation where you felt like that maybe you couldn't trust him?
Yeah, I was a little worried. And looking back at things and talking with him after the game, like, he told me a lot of lies throughout the whole season, even when we were super tight, you know, and that was his game. And I was a very I went into Survivor being a very trusting, trustworthy kind of guy. And yeah, it could have really bit me. But you know what? And early on, I thought that me, Bradley, and Kellen, I was looking at the three of us as the people that would go far in the game. Mm-hmm. So even after like the first swap and whatnot, I'd look over at the other tribe and I thought that we were all good, me, Bradley, and Kellen. And then, you know, as things changed and Laurel came over and me and Dom got closer, things happened to change. But early in the game, I wanted to go far with the two of them.
Okay, well, let's talk about once we get to this first tribe swap. And then, of course, it's going to be you, Dominic, Chris, Morgan, and Angela staying back on Navidi. And I went back and I was watching some of this, and I was surprised to see it seems like it's you're the person who it seems like is talking the most about the let's get rid of Angela part of the plan. You have a conversation with her, but then it seems like that you're the one who's talking about this idea of that we should cut bait on Angela. Is that how it was in the real version of it?
Well, at that point, Angela was so close with Chris, it seemed like she'd do anything that he wanted. So, and Chris was like, he was just trying to get Dom out of the game and he would do anything. So as soon as the four Malolo folks came over, Chris flipped immediately and started working with them. Mm-hmm. And then he got sent to Ghost Island. So now it's four Malolos and four Navidi, and Angela is one of our four. So we're like, man, we should maybe work with these Malolo folks and extend an olive branch and maybe try to get Angela out. Like, hey, look, you guys will be weakening the Navidi ultimately. Let's work together on this one. Let's get an easy one out. And obviously it wasn't that easy. Obviously, you know, they made the right decision. But Angela's name was definitely in my mouth at that point mm-hmm. because of how close she was with Chris.
And then we start to see Dominic go off and do a lot of the idol shenanigans that are going on with showing the people from Malolo the fake idol because Chris told them he had the real idol. How in the loop were you on what was going on there with Dominic showing the idols? Because it's not until the next episode where after the Morgan vote happens, he tells you about having the actual idol.
Yeah. So at that point, I didn't know he had an idol. He told me. He was like, hey, Wendell, I showed Noble a string with a shell on it, and he thought it was an idol. And I had it wrapped up in – he didn't let me know – I mean, I didn't know that he had the real paperwork or anything. Mm-hmm. He said I had it wrapped up in some random stuff that I found or something. So I was like, all right, cool. Dom has made a fake idol. Noble thinks it's real. And, yeah, like I said, Dom kept me out of a lot of his plans. And I started kind of seeing through some later in the game. But at that point, I was just like, all right, man, you pulled a fast one on Noble. Yeah. When in actuality, he pulled a fast one on me and Noble.
Do you think that the stuff with the fake idol and the real idol, do you think that that freaked out the Malolo people a little bit where maybe if that wasn't going on, they might have been more likely to go ahead and go through with that Angela plan for you guys?
I think that they were still uncertain whether or not we were actually going for Angela. Mm-hmm. So I think that the whole, I guess, the smoke and mirrors with the idol and the fake idol just meant that they would not want to go for Dominic because they don't know what he really has. Yeah. So then the choice is, well, we're not going to work with these jokers. We're not going to go for Angela. We'll go for either Wendell or Morgan.
Talk about your reaction to that one and only blindside that happened to you in the game when you are sitting there expecting Angela to go home. And then ultimately it's Morgan who gets voted out.
Yeah. Before that blindside, me and Morgan were laying in the bed talking about the possibility for that to happen. And she said to me, she like reassured me, listen, Libby is 100% with me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, cool. Then we're good. And for that blindside to then happen and for Morgan to walk out and say something like, be wary of the cute blonde.
Yeah, don't trust the cute blonde.
Yeah, don't trust the cute blonde. That one tribal taught me everything I had to know for the rest of the game as far as tribals are concerned and as far as reading people and whatnot. I remember in that tribal, me and Dom, we'd like joke with each other. We'd kind of like look at the other people. We'd say things, and the Malolos wouldn't look at us. They wouldn't laugh at our jokes. I'm like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. And little did I know, these people are seasoned in tribals. They'd been to a couple already. And I should have understood at that point, look, something fishy is going on. Mm-hmm. But I'm just like, this is my first tribal. I'm just excited to be here and be talking to probes. And then boom, they blindsided us and got Morgan out of there. And I just understood at that point, like, it's game time and I need to really pick up on social cues in tribal. I need to look at people. I need to get eye contact and really understand what's going on behind the words that they're saying. I want to read what their eyes are telling me.
So after that tribal council, the you know, we see that night after in the next episode, and you and Dominic end up talking, and you know, and looking back, it seems like this is the point where you two are end up sort of saying, okay, look, the two of us, we're going to figure this out. He tells you that you have the that he has the idol, and it seems like you give a confessional that basically you feel like that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, maybe.
Yeah. So at that point, we were like, man, it's just us. The four Malolo just stabbed us in the back. Chris Noble's about to come back. Angela, we just put our votes on Angela. No one likes us. It's just us. And I felt very down. And then Dom's like, look, man, I have an idol. And when you, for him to say that, I'm like, all right, this guy, you know, when someone divulges the fact that they have an idol to someone else in the game of Survivor, that's a big deal. And at that point, I was like, all right, we're gonna make this thing happen. There will be a way that we can get out of this. And that was kind of what solidified him and I starting to really start this journey together.
Now, before we get into the stuff going on with, you know, Laurel and Donathan, you know, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you know, you built this amazing structure that everybody raved about there at Navidi. And I was thinking about this, like, did you have plans or designs in your head before you went out there? Or do you have an ability that you could just look at these objects out there on Survivor and then like, oh, that should be this, or come up with things based on whatever resources you have?
That's what I do best. Like, I look at whatever is at my disposal. I look at it and I can make something out of it. And I've always been that way. So out there, Dom would see me looking around. I'd be looking up in the trees, and he would come up to me and say, what are you thinking about, Holland? What's going on in your mind right now? I know you're plotting something, because I just look around. And it's like you can see my mind working. And so going out there, I did not have plans for any specific shelter or, you know, we built a million things out there. I didn't have any plans for that. But I knew that once I got out there and I saw what was at my disposal, I would be building a lot of things.
What was the thing that you yourself were the most impressed that you were able to build?
You know, I like two things. I like the clothes drying rack, mm-hmm. which was kind of like a room divider also. It was like five or six pieces of bamboo kind of suspended in the air. And they were all of different lengths, and everyone could just hang their clothes on there. Obviously, we had wet clothes. We'd dry our clothes. And it was kind of a piece of art. I also built a few swing sets out there with just big logs, like pieces of driftwood. They looked pretty good. And then what we called our tool shed, which was after finally at the merge, we were able to get tools to the Navidi Beach from the folks at Malolo, even though they broke half the tools because, you know, Malolo's cursed. So they come over with a bunch of broken shovels and hammers and whatnot. But when we finally got all these tools, me and Michael made what we considered like the tool shed, which was just an area that we put all our tools. We were able to hang up the saws and the hammers and all that stuff. So I liked my tool shed.
Now let's talk about where Laurel and Donathan end up becoming a part of this group. And based on what we see in the episode, it starts off that Laurel and Donathan have a conversation like, hey, don't you guys like Wendell and Dominic better than Chris Noble? And then they end up having this conversation. We see Laurel talk to Dominic in the episode. And then we see you talking with Donathan. How did it unfold for you in the real time?
In the real time, I guess the first day that the Malolos came over, I looked at Laurel and I was like, I think we should talk. And she said, she like gave me a nod or something. Like, we basically had the same idea. Like, we want to work together. And it was just a matter of time for us to, you know, start talking. And also with Donathan, as soon as he came over, I just, you know, a character like Donathan, you just want to reach out and give him a hug. So I think as soon as he, at the swap on the beach, as soon as he came over, I gave him a big hug. And I was like, I couldn't wait to meet you. But ultimately, I thought I was talking a lot more to Laurel, and Dom might have been talking a lot more to Donathan. But at the end of the day, Laurel was doing a lot of the talk to Donathan. Mm-hmm. So whatever kind of we said to Laurel, she filtered. She knows how to talk to Donathan. They got cool from the jump. So she knew how to say things to Donathan, whereas maybe if me or Dom said it, Donathan might not have been as receptive.
Now, you guys are never going to go to tribal council again with that Navidi group. At what point, though, did you start to feel comfortable that maybe even if you did go to a tribal council, that Laurel and Donathan were going to stick with you guys?
Those conversations that we had, like you see what you just asked about, you saw Dominic talking to Laurel and me talking to Donathan. It seemed like, wow, we vibe with these guys. Mm-hmm. They kind of have a similar mindset in that they don't necessarily want to work with a Chris Noble in this game. And we kind of started feeling good about that. We kind of felt like these two, if they were to break from Libby and James, they would side with us. They wouldn't side with a Noble and an Angela. So it was around that time that we started understanding that they weren't exactly super tight with any of the original Malolo, because there's like all the pretty people and the cool kids. And then there's Donathan and Laurel, who were kind of ostracized. Mm-hmm. And we kind of wanted to, I don't want to say like take advantage of that, but we wanted to be accepting to these people that were ostracized. And yeah. I think they saw that.
So ultimately, when you're going to go to Unuya, you end up starting on a clean slate with Chris Noble. But what's the relationship like between you personally and Chris during this time?
I think at Unuya, as much as like I gave him a fake dap early, I was like, yo, let's work together. You know, let's do this. I think at Unuya, I looked at my squad and I'm like, man, we can't lose. Mm-hmm. We're going to skate into the merge. We can't lose. And so it was a matter of, I guess, tightening up my bonds with Laurel and Sebastian, especially, and just managing Chris Noble. Kind of like he's a guy that you have to stroke his ego out on the show, it seemed like. So that's what I was doing. I was just like, man, Chris, do you need help with anything? Like, I, you know, hype him up for the challenge. Before the challenges, he and I would like get this look in our eyes. We'd be ready to take some heads off. He's a fierce competitor. I love to compete with him because I mean, I grew up playing football, basketball, and track. I played a lot of sports and I was a competitor too. And Noble is like a super athlete and he wants to get out there and fight. And that's the kind of player I want to stand next to.
Ultimately, you end up having that second swap and you're going to go to Unuya with Chris and Sebastian, Jenna and Laurel. And you guys are, a extremely dominant tribe in terms of the challenges, not in danger of going to a tribal council at all during that time. Now, you end up bringing this shell that's shown in the show for Sebastian. Was that strategy in any way to say, okay, well, I want to, keep Sebastian loyal to me? Or is that just something that you were doing, not even thinking about the game?
So I think at Navidi 1.0, like they didn't show much of it, but me and Seb had some conversations and I was like, I like this guy a lot. And at one point, he told me about this shell and I don't think he told a lot of people about it. And he was basically like, he told me about a past relationship of his. And I just understood that this guy, he has a big heart and it's the little things that, he connects with.
And he told me about this shell that he was drying out. And he hid it in a tree. And then he got swapped to Malolo. And for some reason, I felt that there was going to be a swap coming up soon. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? Whatever happens, I'm going to grab Sebastian's shell. And whether I give it to him at Ponderosa or if I give it to him, you know, in the game, he's going to get this thing back. It's just what I want to give to him. It wasn't strategy. It wasn't game. It was just my buddy told me about this special memento and I want to return it to him. And it meant a lot for him.
Wendell, no, we're talking here. We can be real about this. That there wasn't any part of you that's saying, okay, I'm playing Survivor. I got to keep people in my good graces, and this isn't going to be, you know, a very meaningful gesture that might help me somewhat strategically in the game.
Anything you do can help you in the game, Rob. And like, I can name five things that I did for every person. I could like talk about a necklace I made for Libby. I spent days fixing a belt for Kellen. There's a lot of stuff that I just did because it's in my nature. I like to just, I'm a giver. And as far as that shell is concerned, yeah, it'll help. Any little gesture helps. But I mean, I was doing it because I was like, Seb is a cool dude. And he's been talking about this shell and whatever past he had with me. So I'm going to return the shell to him.
Okay.
And it paid dividends. It did.
All right. So at this time at Eunuia, something that we've heard about, but we didn't get to see in the show was that you end up making a fake immunity idol. I think the first fake immunity idol that you are going to make in the game, and you end up hiding it and it ends up getting found by Jenna and Laurel. Why? What was your intention with that fake immunity idol? What were you hoping would happen?
I wanted Noble to find it and get a false sense of security. But this idol was pretty dope, man. Like, had this season not been full of relics from the past, I think that idol would have really worked because it was like a true skull and crossbones. It had a leather necklace with a magnetic clasp, and I carved out eyes and a mouth, and I used charcoal for like the features. It was a dope. It was the dopest fake idol. And then I wrapped it up with, I guess, the parchment. This season, every idol came with two pieces of parchment: the history of the, you know, the relic, and also the normal idol parchment. So I wrapped it up with Dom's parchment, and I was like, this thing is ready to go. It's locked and loaded. And so I hit it hoping that Noble will find it. And then Jenna and Laurel stumble upon it, and ultimately it doesn't work. But, you gotta shoot for the fences.
When you say Dom's parchment, why did you have the parchment to his idol?
I think I told him, like, yo, I'm making a fake idol. You know, hopefully Noble will find it. Whatever. Noble believes anything. So I'm making a fake idol. Let me borrow that parchment. He was like, all right, cool, here.
Okay, and then you were separated from him, and he never got it back from you.
That's correct.
Wow. Yeah. Well, he was like your supply shop for this entire game when you needed materials.
He was the plug. If I needed something, he looked out.
So on day 18, there's a scene in the show where you guys win a reward, you eat, and then you talk about how everybody is tired now and this is going to be a great time for you to go and search for an idol. You end up finding a clue to what's ultimately going to be Eric Reichenbach's necklace, which you're going to hold on to for the rest of the game. And, you know, so many people wanted to know the question of, where were you able to hide that idol the entire game? Because it was a big round necklace.
Yeah, that thing was entirely too big, man. I wish, man, I'm glad I found it. But geez, Luis, it was, you just got to walk. You got to take a long walk and just bury it somewhere. And that's what I did. I found a tree that was really off the beaten path. And then I just buried it. And before tribal, I would go get it. Fortunately, we all had these big duffel bags, and we all were stuffing a lot of stuff in our bags. We wanted to, you know, whatever we'd make or find, or some coral or our clothes. Everyone, when we go to tribal, we got to bring all our things because you don't know if you're going home. So everyone was coming to tribal with these super full bags. So my bag was very full, and it had Eric's big idol in it. But there weren't many red flags about my bag being extra large because everyone had a full bag.
Now, when you found the Eric Reichenbach necklace and you talked about that, you said in the episode that the curse will be reversed. And I thought that the show missed an opportunity to talk about this because I kind of feel like that your prophecy did come true. And I feel like that you did reverse the curse of the Eric Reichenbach necklace because Eric Reichenbach lost the game in this, you know, historic mistake of the show when he, at the final five, gave the necklace to one of the women in the game and then got voted out. And here you were, you took that same necklace. And at the final five, you gave it to a woman in the game. You did not get voted out. And then that woman cast the tie-breaking vote for you to win the game.
Yeah, the curse was totally reversed. He hands it over to women. They write his name down and vote him out. I hand it over to a very close lady to me. She writes my name down to cast a tie-breaking vote to give me $1 million. I think that I think it was reversed. And I'm so fortunate because in this season, I mean, I could have done something stupid with that idol, and fortunately, I was able to use it wisely.
Yes, and I thought Eric Reichenbach, I thought they brought him out on the finale to talk about this with you, but that's not what they talked about. Did Eric Reichenbach come to you and thank you personally? Wendell, thank you for releasing me from this cursed necklace.
I was able to hang out with him in the green room a little bit. He didn't thank me for relinquishing the curse. But
Well, how dare he?
Yeah, he's still a good dude. He's still good in my book. Thank you, Eric. Thank you for that idol. Thank you for your blunder years ago. It helped me out a few weeks ago. Thank you.
All right, so let's start to talk about what's going on at the merge in the game, and then you're there back with everybody. But you know that the big focus is going to be on Dominic versus Chris Noble, and you end up getting sucked into all of this drama, but you are placed in the position of trying to broker some sort of a peace between Dominic and Chris Noble. What were you hoping for out of those meetings that you tried to set up? Not unlike a Dennis Rodman bringing together people who have differences.
No. At that point, Chris was continuing to go at Dom, and despite anything Dom would do, he tried to talk to him or whatever. There wasn't going to be a peaceful outcome to this. And I wanted to try my hand one last time and see if like we can make it through one vote or a couple votes. Let's just find a common enemy and get them out of here instead of killing ourselves. Because, you know, once one of us goes or once one of the big dogs go, then others probably will fall. So I just thought like, man, we could work with this guy. Man, we could even bring this guy to the end and he won't get any votes. Mm-hmm. So I was willing to work with him at that point. And I'm like, man, if not, even if we don't have to make any promises to go deep in the game, let's just get out one of these Malolo guys that are threatening right now. And we could figure everything else out tomorrow morning.
You seem to be getting frustrated that you're saying to him, okay, well, tell us a name. Tell us one of those people over there that you would want to go for. And he would not give you guys a name. He was too suave for that.
Entirely too suave. Entirely too suave. Yeah, so he wasn't even willing to do that. And then he jumped up and ran off. And I was like, all right, we got to take this thing nuclear. And yeah, that's what we did. We had to do whatever we had to do to get him out.
Okay. So Chris Noble is going to go and he gathers everybody together to go to the well. And then you end up having sort of these side conversations. I think we see Dominic is talking with Laurel and Donathan. And there's a moment where you're talking with, I think it's Libby and Jenna and Sebastian. And you're talking about how, you know, it doesn't have to be a dictatorship under Chris Noble. Like there is another way that we can go. And I noticed this about you in a lot of the scenes that I feel like that you don't necessarily come out and tell people about here's what we should do. Here's the new plan. But I feel like that you sort of present this other like, well, maybe there's another way to go, but yeah, you leave it open ended.
Yeah. You don't want to be the dictator out in Survivor. The leaders get their heads cut off. You kind of want to lead them to water a little bit and let them drink it. So I just, and in the game of Survivor, you want other people to say the name that you were thinking. So, I don't know. I just kind of wanted to let them know, like, Chris does, you know, talk at people and he has these big plans and, you know, but maybe we should all have an opinion and maybe we should all have free thought and our own say at this. You know, I kind of just wanted to throw it out there a little bit. And at that point, I think they already at that point wanted to vote against Chris.
It's something else I've noticed from you in a couple of other parts of the season. In the first hour where you're going back and telling Dominic about how, you know, that you've heard his name being tossed around and there's questions about like, well, was it Chris? And you're saying, well, it could have been Chris. And you let people get to the conclusions that you seem to want them to get to, but you give them enough breadcrumbs to get to that destination on their own, it seems like.
Yeah, that was definitely a strategy of mine. Over the years, I've taken so many notes, and one of them was like, you don't want to show them the conclusion, but you want to lead them towards, I guess, thinking that they thought that conclusion up, or that you want them to say whatever you're thinking. You want them to put it out there. So it's not like the words aren't coming out of your mouth, but you guys collectively thought of this plan or whatever. So that was definitely a strategy of mine.
How much of that comes from your background in law in terms of, you know, talking to somebody that might be on the witness stand, or is that a completely different way that you would talk to somebody?
Well, no, I've talked to so many different people in court, and in the game of Survivor, it's this collection of, you know, this random cross section of society. You're talking to so many different people and you want to steer them towards certain outcomes. And I think that me working in court for so long definitely helped that and helped the way I communicated with different folks in Survivor.
So we get to that night where Chris Noble is going to go home, that we know that none of you guys knew that he had the hidden immunity idol that night. What was that reveal like for you?
It was shocking. I think I hung out with Chris after the season quite a few times, and we went to like a bunch of basketball games and stuff. And I feel like, thinking back right now, I think he said something like, I still have some tricks up my sleeve or something. Mm-hmm. None of us had any idea that this Joker went to Ghost Island, and like looking back and seeing him cranky the next day and stuff. It's, it's clear that, you know, something went on, and for us to watch this merge episode, it was such a fantastic episode. There was so much jam packed into it. It was just the best episode for me to watch.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hilarious episode. And yeah, Dominic is talking about how, like, boy, Chris is all cranky today. I don't know what his problem is, but he was at Ghost Island all night. But the thing that so many people were talking about after this episode was your voting confessional. And if you don't mind, I'd love to revisit that with you.
We won a lot together. Respect for that. But socially, you don't know what you're doing. I hope you stop saying I so much. I hope you start listening to people. Oh, yeah. And finally, somebody had to say it. I'll say it. Stop rapping. You're trash. At rapping. You're garbage at rapping. You can't rap. You have no bars. Yeah. Put the mic down, bro. Put the pen down, bro. Use an eraser.
Oh, man. Yeah, about that. I got a lot. I could go on about that.
Man, please do.
All right. There's a couple ways to look at it. From my perspective on the island, I was subject, like, to this guy rapping. I was on every tribe with him. And he's rapping
19 days, right?
Yeah, and he's rapping all the time. And it's so bad. So I'm just like, and I'm gassing him up from day one. The first night we're out there, I'm laying over at one side of the bed with like Kellen and Bradley. And I'm like, hey, yo, Noble, drop some bars for us. I'm just like egging him on. And he's just eating it up like, yeah, I'm D Wade and blah, blah, blah with these J's. And I'm like, bruh, I'm like, give me another one, Noble. Give me. So like, I'm gassing him the whole time, but we're all laughing at him the whole, we're laughing. Like, it's funny. Mm-hmm. It's the Noble show and you're laughing at that. So, and then it just got like kind of annoying. And it's like, all right, yeah, you're rapping again, whatever. And I'm not going to call you out in the game of Survivor. I'm not putting a target on me. So no, I'm not going to call you out and say, yo, your bars are trash. I'm not going to say that to your face, but you know, if I'm writing your name down, then I could just let you know, yo, dude, your raps are not good. They're trash. You gotta stop. And yeah. I just wanted to let that be known. But then when that episode aired, Chris was not all right. He was not all right with what the things that I said. So that's a whole different dimension. And it took me a while to kind of understand his perspective. Although from my perspective, when I was saying all that stuff, though I had a straight face, it was all jokes. Like I was just joking. I was trying to be funny. I thought it was funny. He didn't take it that way. And he went in his exit press and said, like, Wendell has deep-seated hatred and he's an angry person and it's classless. And it took me a while to kind of understand where he was coming from with that. And then I thought about that episode and I thought about Chris's whole character on the show and how he kind of looked kind of like a buffoon that last episode. This man, he's rapping, people are laughing at him, people are getting tired of him. And like he goes out and finds an idol and he's probably watching the show with his mom or something. His mom's definitely watching. He was out there trying to champion MS along with, you know, his own stuff. He was trying to bring awareness to MS, and for his mom to watch and for him to watch this episode where they're kind of making him look pretty silly, and for him to get voted off with an idol in his pocket that could only be used at that tribal or the next. It's like there's so much getting thrown at him right now. And your people that get voted off are already sad. And then the last image you see is me talking mad trash about your rapping. I think that at that point, he picked a target. And he was like, man, Wendell is just this terrible person. And this is the person I'm going to, you know, be mad at for forever. So I understand how he was.
Is he mad at you still?
Man, we got over it like shortly before the reunion. But we weren't talking for a couple months after, like, we've been kicking it. I stayed at his place in Brooklyn. Like, this was my guy after the show. And then once that episode aired, we weren't cool at all. I tried to text him. He wasn't responding. He said he didn't get my texts. Whether that's the case or not, I finally met up with him in New York. And I was trying to go surprise everyone in New York. There was a bunch of people getting up, like Dom, James, Andrea was getting up with us, and Chris Noble. I don't know. A bunch of people were getting together. And somehow Chris realizes that Wendell is driving up from Philly. And he's like, man, I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting these texts from Dom like, yo, he's trying to leave. You got to hurry up, speed up here. So I finally get there. I park, I run upstairs. And Chris is kind of just, he gives me a quick dap, but he sits at the other end of the table and we don't talk for the whole time. And I'm like, man, this is just sour. This is just a bad vibe right now. So then he goes and he walks to the restroom and I'm like, yo, I got to go talk to this guy. And they're like, all right, go ahead. And then I wait for him outside of the restroom and we start talking. He's still very upset. And we're kind of like almost arguing, going through it for like a half hour. And I guess it ended with me just continuously apologizing for saying that he can't rap. It's like, I guess I had to take the high road. And then I guess as the months went on, I kind of just started thinking about that last episode and the taste that that last episode could have left in his mouth. And I'm like, all right, he was probably just hurt from the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I was the last image. But now we are cool.
Okay.
Though I haven't kicked it with him since the finale.
And now, so you're saying that you've changed your opinion about Chris's rap, and now you're saying that he can rap and he does have bars.
Absolutely not. By no means, Rob. Come on. No, Noble, he doesn't have bars. He can't rap. He needs to put the pen down. It's over for that. He can model. He's a super athlete. He could do all these things. Rapping is not what he should be doing. Love you to death, Nobes.
Put the mic down, bro.
I don't think we ever got your opinion on the Chris Noble Ponderosa rap. Was that better for you?
Believe it or not, that Ponderosa rap was better for me. It okay. looked like he was having fun with it. He was able to laugh at himself. There were like silly moments in the rap. And although the bars weren't even all right, the imagery that was with it, I was like, this is cool. I can watch this. I think we watched it before we even left Fiji. That's how quick they whipped it up. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So when I saw that, I was dying. I'm like, yo, where was this hilarious dude? So yeah, that video and him being able to laugh at himself, I hope he was laughing at himself in it. I was able to watch that.
Now Chris Noble is gone, and what's the vibe for you and Dominic at this point in the game? Are you thinking, okay, well, let's stick with this Navidi thing and knock out all these Malolos, or is at this point are you thinking about how maybe we should go Laurel and Donathan, or it's still a developing situation?
Oh, we were ready to go with Laurel and Donathan at that point. Mm-hmm. We were pretty solid with them. And we wanted to keep the alliance very covert. And we did a good job at keeping that on the hush. But there were still a few big obstacles in our way. We still kind of thought that Libby was kind of running stuff for these Malolo folks when the Morgan vote was orchestrated by James. We had an impression that Libby did it. Like, she could just bat her eyes in front of anyone and get them to vote her way. We also had Michael, who was this guy that just wouldn't go away. It's not like he did anything fantastic in any of these challenges, but he just, his attitude stayed positive. People loved this guy and he just wouldn't go away. And the moves he made, it was just like, wow, this is a scary player. So yeah, we wanted to work with Laurel and Don on the low, but also have our sights set on a few big targets first, before we have to kind of really show our hand and show that we're working with Laurel and Don, and we're about to start taking out some Navidis.
Now, at this point in the game, you're going to pull Laurel aside. You said you felt like that maybe Laurel seemed like she was not into it so much at this point. So you pull her aside and you tell her about your idol. And I talked about this with her, and she talks about how that really she was so confused because she thought that she found the idol at Yanuya. So it was sort of a buzzkill that her idol meant that it was the fake idol that was intended for Chris Noble. But why did you feel like that this was the right time to tell Laurel, okay, I have an idol?
There were a few dimensions to this one because, her and Jenna found my fake idol. But earlier in that day or the day before, Laurel and I had a conversation, and I think I said something short to her, like, don't worry, I got a little something, we're good. And I walked away or whatever it was. I was short with her, and I was kind of like, I wouldn't have thought that I was dismissive, but I was just short. And if I were talking to Dominic, if I was short with him, he'd give me a head nod, maybe a fist bump, and we'd be good. But in talking to Laurel, she didn't, the way I spoke to her, she wasn't receptive to that. And then for the rest of the day or whatever it was, I was like, man, Laurel, I'm not feeling this vibe. What is going on with her? So it could have been me talking short to her like that or whatever, but I felt the need to come to her and tell her exactly what I had going on. Like, look, I found an idol. And it seemed like she was upset or whatever. Why are you lying to me? She said that. And I'm just like, man, I'm telling you I found an idol. Like, I thought that this would help things. I thought this is now a tool for us. Mm-hmm. But it didn't seem that way on TV. Like, it seemed like, you know, that was not the best move, and everyone tweeted me like, why are you telling everybody that you have an idol? And, you know.
Yeah.
Another dumb move by Wendell, but, you know, it worked out ultimately.
Was that decision influenced at all? Because was it sort of this effect where Dominic started showing people about his idol, and that was sort of, you know, shorthand for a way that people could trust each other on Ghost Island when somebody shows you their advantage?
I mean, historically in Survivor, when you open up about certain things, usually that builds some more trust. So that was just another level that I was willing to expose to Laurel at that point. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Dom did it for me and it worked days before. So I was trying to do it for her.
So you guys end up, you go on this reward and you feel like that's going to, you know, you're happy that you got to go on the reward with Laurel. And Angela is seemingly in a little bit of a different headspace now that Chris Noble is gone. And when you guys go back to camp, that Angela is going to talk to Michael. And the name that is on Michael's mind is Wendell.
Oh, my goodness.
We need to go after Wendell. What was that like for you the first time that now you've heard your name is being floated around?
Well, I just built this phenomenal tool shed with Michael, and I was like talking to him about his father, talking about my father. I thought we were solid. And I think he even said something like he would vote for me if I made it to the end. So
lies.
So when Angela says Michael, I'm shocked. I'm like, I like this guy. Like, that was, I really like this kid. So then I'm like, all right, Michael's my number one target. When you start hearing your name come up, whoever's saying your name is your target. So, And you know what's funny? One night I was laying next to like Desiree and Michael, and we would always talk about music. And at one point, Michael was
Kanye
like,
versus Chance the Rapper.
Kanye versus Chance, you know.
Your team Chance.
Team Chance, absolutely. Kanye's lost it. Michael's like, hey, Wendell, how do you spell your name? I'm like, what? How? You don't ask somebody how they, you want to know how to spell my name in the game of Survivor? Why? Why? You know, I should have said M-I-C-H-H. I just took it like, man, this guy is. When I look back, I'm like, man, he really is. He was an 18-year-old out there. And there were some things that kind of showed it. But at that point, I was just like, an E and two L's, man. An E and two L's. Jesus. But
was that why he was asking about? Because he was going to vote for you and he wanted to spell your name right?
He wanted to spell my name properly when he wrote it down. But it was like, oh, no, I just want to know. But how do you spell your name, though? It's like, come on, man. He wasn't trying to like muscle me or strong arm me. He was just like really trying to figure it out.
He's respectful.
Yeah, I guess so.
For future survivors that are listening, they count the vote even if you spell the name wrong. Just guess.
Yeah.
Sound it out.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Don't ask for the proper spelling.
Yeah. Yeah, that's silly.
This was also the episode that had the gross food competition, which it was probably the competition that you did perform the worst in.
That's correct.
But yeah. Your hero, Jeremy, is so good at this.
And I was thinking about him the whole time.
Yes. And,
he even cleaned up. He like ate afterwards. He finished the plate. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. So, yeah, I couldn't do all of that.
Did Jervis rag on you at all for not even being able to compete in the gross food challenge?
He did not. No.
Very respectful also.
Yeah. That's my buddy. Yeah.
All right.
In that challenge, it's like, man, if I get through these fish eyes, I'm not getting through those grubs. I'm not getting through that stupid, whatever sea slug and that, whatever that gross thing at the end was, I'm not getting through that. So I can either kind of cut my losses and just, you know, walk away, or I can try it and man, it's just going to be all bad. And I'm so squeamish, Rob. Like I didn't want to look down at it. I'm looking straight ahead. I'm trying to get all the saliva I can in my mouth. Cause I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to swallow this thing whole. And as soon as I picked it up, I looked down, I saw this giant eye and there's red stuff on the bottom, like blood or whatever it is. I had to launch that thing, man. I launched it. And I messed up Chelsea, too. I'm sorry, Chelsea. Love you.
Now, to us watching at home, it seemed like, oh, wow, this was Angela's breakout episode. Angela's totally different now that Chris Noble isn't around. But, you know, I've heard from other players, oh, you know, Angela was actually really funny out there. Was this sort of the aberration, or was it just she was like this all the time? We just saw her in this one episode.
She had her moments. So, like, a lot of funny things would come out of her mouth. And the words that would come out of her mouth were pretty hilarious at many times throughout the whole season. But I guess, you know, you can't show everything. Clearly, we saw that our season. But yeah, she was funny. She had all of these weird sayings, and we didn't know what she was talking about.
Could you give me one?
Like she said soup sandwich. Have you heard of a soup sandwich?
What is a soup sandwich?
Anything that is like messy or just anything that goes haywire or whatever, she's like, that's a soup sandwich. Cause a soup sandwich, I guess, is very messy, I guess. I don't know. But she had these weird sayings. And yeah, like a soup sandwich. So we're like, what are you talking about? Then I guess as the season goes on, we start using these weird sayings like soup sandwich. But she also had like, she's a war hero, and she had real stories about, you know, people she's seen pass away in training and in Iraq and Afghanistan. And like, she had these stories about her children and having to leave them for so long. So you connect with her as a mother out there. But like Survivor wasn't Angela's game. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's not her game, but yeah, I have nothing but great things to say about Ange.
All right. So in this next episode, this is going to be where Desiree is going. She wants to make a move against Kellen, and she's going to come to the Malolos, and this is going to be all drama. And then Laurel is going to come back. And in the episode, we see her talk to Dominic. From what I understand, she talked to you as well. But you're almost nowhere to be seen in this episode. And that I think it almost speaks to your game, where I think that you were able to avoid the super dramatic moments for the most part. What was going through your mind? Was that intentional when everything was blowing up with Desiree?
Yeah, I didn't want to be at the focal point of a lot of drama in the show at all. I don't like living my life with drama. And I know that that's something that can end a game very fast if you're at the focal point of drama, because that makes you a big target very fast. So Desiree did that to herself at that moment. She started swinging for the fences. She made this plan with the Malolo folks, and Laurel came back and told us. And she basically said, hey, look, Des is going for the big dogs. And it's you, Wendell, it's Dom, and it's Kellen. And when I hear my name come up, I'm like, all right, you got to go. And that's the same with Dom. It's like, you can't say my name and think that you're going to be all right out here. Cause if you don't get me this time, you're going to keep trying to get me. So I was like, all right, we're going for Des tonight, but I didn't want to be the one arguing with Des or trying to get to the bottom of it. Laurel is my girl. It did take some convincing for us to really understand that, wow, Desiree's really trying to play Survivor right now. And she's trying to do something big right now. It took some convincing from Laurel, but when we were convinced, I took the information and I made my decision. All right, Des is out of here tonight.
In my conversations that I had with both Laurel and Kellen in, you know, this round here with the Desiree vote, and then the next round that's coming up with the split tribal, you know, both of them talked about the way that you, you know, handled your business in terms of, you know, getting Kellen ultimately on board to vote out Desiree here, as sort of like the subtle differences between you and Dominic. And, you know, I describe you guys often as sort of a good cop, bad cop. And the thing that I'd love to know from you is, how much intention was there on your part, where you talked about a lot in the final tribal council about the Dom show and how, you know, that you knew there was going to be the Dom show. But even in these moments here that are happening, did you realize that that Dominic was taking more heat from different people in these interactions that were happening?
I didn't really realize that then. I think it took kind of later in the game for me to understand that, like, wow, this guy is being the Dom show. I started putting pieces together, you know, like three quarters of the way through, like, wow, he's done these things. This could look like a resume. And he's very vocal. So everyone's seen this guy speak a lot. And there have been characters that have been pretty successful with this strategy. So I wanted to continue to be me, but I was like, maybe something needs to change, or maybe I should just, I don't know, like later in the season, and we'll probably get to this, I started doing things that weren't really me. But like at that point, I was just like, all right, I'm going to still be me. I'm going to still talk to Kellen the same way I always have been. I told her that I loved her a million times out there because like I love the person that she is. You know, she's a great, great person. And despite what was shown for, you know, until her boot episode, she is like the most lovable and empathetic person and a crazy, amazing Survivor player. So like I still, even though she wasn't on the same page necessarily with us because she'd been working with Dez for a while, I didn't want to come at her in any harsh manner in trying to like, you know, aim all of our guns at Dez. I kind of wanted to still do it the way that I've always been doing.
Kellen told me in my conversation with her that she was very impressed when she came to realize that, you know, she came to you and had a conversation and the plan was already set in stone to vote out Dez. But you talked to her in a way that made her feel like that there that she still had a choice in the matter in terms of how it was going to go. Was that intentional on your part?
Yeah, my whole game was about not telling people what to do, but letting them come up with it. And yeah, we absolutely were ready to go for Dez. And it took Kellen to the ninth hour to come around to that. But I wasn't going to tell her anything. I'm not dictating anything to anybody out there, but I'd rather steer them in that direction.
So Dez goes home, and now we get to this split tribal council round, and I've really been looking forward to talking to you about this because you're going to end up in this group of five that's going to have yourself, Dominic, Laurel, Kellen, and Michael. And Michael has this plan that he's going to tell people that he has the idol, which sends Kellen into a little bit of a tailspin. And she's very concerned that Michael is going to play his idol and she's going to get idol out of the game. And she's going to come to you and tell you about her concern. And you're telling her that she should put a vote on Laurel. But at the same time, Laurel is your ally. And you end up telling Laurel that she should end up putting a vote on Kellen. And this has been described, so I've heard, as what you look at as your signature move in the game. Is that fair?
That was like a strategic move in my game that wasn't shown and it wasn't talked about in the finale. But that was kind of like, that was kind of me kind of manipulating folks. And I thought it was a pretty good move. Like, if you think pretty much very, very close to tribal, I think Laurel was on a confessional and Kellen told me, this is like right before we went to tribal. Kellen was like, look, I have an extra vote. And I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. She was like, I'm going to play it tonight. And I think what she said, what to me was she was going to play one for Michael and one for Laurel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She ended up playing both for Laurel. But then after that, when Laurel got back from her confessional, we didn't have any time to talk. So we're going to tribal and I'm just thinking like, man, Laurel's about to get a vote and I would like to protect her somehow, some way. And we don't know if Michael has an idol or he doesn't. So maybe, and Dom and myself will be voting for Michael. And maybe if I stand up and I whisper some things into people's ears just to cause some confusion, but ultimately I tell Kellen like to keep voting whatever she said. And I tell Laurel, hey, look, Kellen's voting for you. You need to put a vote on Kellen. I think that's what I said. And I think I also said, I will protect you. So what that did was from my perspective, that meant Laurel would get one vote. Kellen would get one vote. I might get one vote from Michael, depending on who he put his vote on. The other votes would go to Michael. And we need to know if Michael has an idol or doesn't. So if he stands up, he has an idol, then I can play my idol for myself or for Laurel. And then that would force a tie between Kellen and maybe Laurel, in which case we would vote Kellen off, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I wanted to make sure that there would be some protection on Laurel. And so I wanted to make sure that there was a vote or votes going towards Kellen. And then I would use my idol if I had to, because we were uncertain. Michael was this guy that had strategically played an idol already, and an idol or two idols already. And he's this guy, he's great at lying. And he could sniff out idols. So we don't know if he has one. So we need some kind of backup plan. And ultimately, Michael didn't have an idol, so he went home. But in the event that he had one or something, I would have been able to play my idol for myself or for Laurel to get someone else out.
This move is going to ultimately destabilize Kellen and Laurel to the point where they're never able to get on the same page. Was that just an amazing thing that happened because of this? Or were you thinking along those lines while all of this was going on?
For a while, I thought I told Laurel to work with Kellen or something. I thought that these two would be able to get along together. But it didn't seem like they were clicking the way, like, on paper, I would think that they would click. And I knew that there would be a time that Kellen has to go. She's a scary player. And, like, we truly thought that if she got to the end, she could get votes. So there had to be a point where a rift was created. And I think I didn't actively think, like, all right, this is the moment where Laurel will definitely stand by our side and there will be a rift between her and Kellen. No, but it was a great consequence, because we had to get Kellen out of there shortly thereafter. So it ended up working out very well.
Was it frustrating for you to not have your effort here in this round of play be shown in the episode?
You know, it was kind of frustrating, and like leading up to the episode, I was excited to see that. And knowing that in the finale, I talk about that, I was like, well, what are they going to show in the finale? And then I started thinking about it, and I'm like, oh, this game, this edit is based on Wendell being pretty good socially and Dom being pretty good strategically. So, I mean, they didn't highlight that part of my strategic game because, I mean, it ultimately didn't make any real... Michael went home. Michael got all the votes and he got the majority of the votes and went home. So like it didn't kind of like change the course of the game too much. I mean, yeah, it shook up Laurel and Kellen. They weren't cool from then, but it kind of hurt a little bit not to see, you know?
I understand that. And I've heard about this from, especially with Laurel and Kellen, who were the two people who were involved with that. And both of them have told me that they felt like, okay, after that night, they were never able to get on the same page. And, you know, I maintain that I think that if you and Dominic were going to get split up, it would have taken some combination of Kellen and Laurel putting their heads together and picking up a few of the other pieces to unseat you guys as sort of the controlling alliance in the game. And because of your moves in this round, then that ultimately is never going to happen. I do wonder that maybe the show didn't portray that, because in the next couple episodes that, you know, every vote is sort of like, is Laurel going to go back and vote with the girls? Then maybe it's that it looks even less likely that that's going to happen if they really, you know, blow up that rift between them a little bit more. But I mean that they could have shown it.
They could have shown it. I would have been happy about it, but. It is what it is. I mean, other people have gotten worse edits. So,
yeah. And the check cleared.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to go to this next episode where we end up where we're going to have our loved ones visit. And here comes original Wendell.
Yes. Wen Sr., the man, yes. Myth, the yes. legend.
The OG legend.
Wen in the building. Yeah, that's my man.
Right. And okay, so you're ultimately going to get picked to go on this loved one's visit, but you have the opportunity to go to Ghost Island, and really no hesitation from you. You said, you know, your father would have done the same thing. But when you get to Ghost Island and you see that you have a second chance at the immunity challenge and this chance to practice, at what point do you realize that maybe this advantage is kind of a bust?
Yeah, that's not really in it. Nah, it's I got out. I was glad that I was able to see the challenge that was coming up. I was glad that I was given some of the tools to practice it. But man, if you... In practice, it's like, all right, if I have a second chance at this, then just let me pick this thing up. And if my ball falls, then make sure that those jokers, don't let them hit the reset button. Don't let them put their sticks and stuff down and start over. So like in the actual challenge, it was like, man, this isn't. You know, it might have been cool to eat some food with Senior and hang out with Aunt Patty and all these jokers. But yeah, so out there, and bad things happened on Ghost Island to me. I ended up burning my water shoes out there. So it was not the best experience. Now, I wasn't crying on Ghost Island, and other people cried on Ghost Island, but like, it wasn't the best experience for me.
The first time they did this advantage, when Malcolm got it, it didn't make a difference. This is the thing. You're either good at this or you're not good at this. And, you know, having this second chance to go into it, I don't think they should not do this one again.
Yeah, they don't need to do that one anymore.
Put this one back in the supply closet in Fiji.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so ultimately in this vote, this is going to be where Chelsea is going to go home. And, you know, the four women are still, you know, back on the beach and they're talking about everything and they feel like that they can pull Donathan in. Now, you have a hidden immunity idol, which you end up holding on to until the end. Are you sweating this at all that Laurel and Donathan are going to potentially flip here? Because it only would have taken one of them to flip to force a 4-4 tie here. And this is that tribal council where Donathan is dropping truth bombs. And you seem concerned when Donathan starts talking about how, yes, there's definitely a crack in Navidi and we're going to see it tonight. But you don't end up playing your idol.
Yeah, that tribal was kind of scary, man. I was sweating bullets. Like, Don started kind of going off and doing his thing. And that started the whole Don flying off the rails thing. And there were looks that Chelsea and Kellen and Ange were giving me. And I was like, all right, this is a scary tribal right now. But I'd love to hold on to my idol. And I think what ultimately made me not play it was some looks that Laurel gave me. And because, like, you can give someone a look and then, like, I think I was giving her the look like, yo, man, what's up with your boy, Don Don? Like, giving her the look and looking at Don Don. And she was kind of giving me a common look like we're good. We're good. Mm-hmm. I know that's like a whole conversation with just looks. But for real, I think at the end of the day, in that vote, I think it was Laurel, like, taking care of me and really saying somehow, some way, saying, like, he's with us. Whether I whispered to her or not, I mean, there were lots of whispers that weren't shown in the whole season and things that weren't shown. But I think because I was secure with Laurel, I ended up holding on to it.
Did Laurel ever make you nervous on any particular vote that she might not be with you guys?
No, not so much. And, you know, watching it back, you see her wavering and you see her talking about making the move on me and Dom. But like out there, when it came to voting, at least we seemed very solid and very on the same page. Like she would question things and I'd have to give her like a big hug or she'd have to give me a hug for whatever reason. But ultimately when like after, you know, she questioned something about my game or Dom's game or where she stands amongst our top players or whatever. At the end of the day, when it came to voting, we were on the same page.
Were you surprised when you watched the episode to see how much Laurel and Donathan talked about flipping and going with the other side?
Yes, I was very surprised. Like throughout the season, it was like every episode I see Laurel talking about, you know, maybe now's the time to make the big move. These guys got too much power. These guys are doing, you know, so yeah, watching it back, it was kind of suspenseful. And I had these big watch parties and people were like, oh man, she's going to cut you tonight. And fortunately it didn't happen. And I didn't see, I don't know, man, it's tough to say like what would have happened if Laurel would have cut us. But fortunately she didn't. And you know,
well, she's taken, you know, a lot of heat over the course of the season for going down to the end with you guys. Do you see a spot in the game where, you know, knowing what you know now, that you think she should have gone in a different direction?
When's the opportune moment for Laurel to do that? Is it like around the 7, 6, 7, 8, 9 vote where there's still a good contingent of Navidi women or whoever, Navidi players, that would just get Laurel out of there immediately? If she can, it's hard to predict going on some kind of like ridiculous immunity run or something like that. So it's like, if you were to cut me and Dom, or me, if you were to cut me, then Dom would go shortly thereafter, but then you would go shortly thereafter. So do you make your trip to the end almost impossibly difficult by getting rid of us early, or do you go with us to the end and make your final tribal pretty impossibly difficult? I don't know. It's tough to say when she should have done it, if at all. But then there's another question. If you waited late to do it at like a 5 or a 6 or whatever, and you get one of us out of there, then you have to sit next to just one of us. That might be a landslide. So it's tricky to say. It's like she's stuck in a rock and a hard place. It's like damned if you do, damned if you don't. So
yeah,
I don't know. I wouldn't want to be in her shoes trying to make that decision.
In the final 7 round, that's when Ketlin is going to go home, and you and Laurel and Dominic end up, you guys go on the reward together. And then ultimately, you come back, and this is where we see Donathan in the shelter with you talking about how, hey, just so you know, if you get to the end, I'm voting for Dominic.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I'm like, why are you telling me this, man? Like, okay, Don. His intention might have been so that I would bring him to the end to keep him off the jury. But I wasn't even thinking that. I was like, all right, you've incentivized Dominic to put your behind on the jury.
Right. And I think he might have also been, you know, trying to, you know, get you to go after Dominic yourself.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's like, at that point, I wasn't trying to get Dom out of there. I was comfortable working with him. We had a plan in place. I wanted to go to the end with this guy, straight up, Rob. Like, I was comfortable going to the end. I mean, in hindsight, like, that man played a great game, and he could have won that game. It's like, we tied. So, like, maybe I should have gotten him out of there. But, like, in the game, I wanted to go to the end with him and Laurel for a long, long time. And whatever Don was trying to tell me, I wasn't trying to buy any of that. Yeah, and also, this is, you know, when Don started moving and shaking. And in the game, me and Dominic, we're like, what is this kid doing? Like, they showed a tenth of the craziness that was going on with him at that moment. But looking back on it, and even my friends that watched, they're like, yo, what was Don doing? He could have skated to the end with you guys. But looking back at it, I'm like, man, something had to be done. A move had to be made against me and Dom. Someone had to do something. And you know what? Donathan, he started trying to make those moves. And I applaud that, because me and Dominic, we had a lot of power. And, you know, we started steamrolling things. And yeah, Don tried to make a move against that to shake things up.
One of the things that ends up getting Donathan very upset is when he ends up seeing that you go to Dominic and say, hey, I need to get another parchment, I guess. And so he says, all right, let me see if I can go in my bag. And he's going to go look for it. Why did you need a fake idol then at the final seven?
I was bored, Rob. Nah, man, I don't know what I was doing, man. Like, it's your first time playing Survivor. You're swinging for the fences, man. Like, they want to emphasize all these big moves and stuff. I'm like, man, I need another one. I need a better one. And mm-hmm. I just kept making them. I wake up in the middle of the night. I go out to like the beach and I make fake idols. Like, man, I don't know what I was thinking about. I don't know, Rob. I didn't need to do that at that point. I had an idol. And then I used it in that tribal to kind of like flex on Don Don. It was not a good look.
Okay, we'll get there. We'll get there. That's still one vote away. Just going back to your relationship with Dominic, as an outsider looking in, that I felt like that you seemed like you were comfortable going to the end with him, that that it was my read from the outside that you felt like that you could beat Dominic at the final tribal council. He seemed more paranoid that he needed to get you out along the way. But I never sensed from you that you felt like you needed to get rid of him.
Yeah, I thought that he put up a great fight, but I thought that I had a good game and I thought I had a good resume to stand on. And I was willing to go to the end with him. And that was it. I wasn't petrified to go to the end with Dom straight up. Mm-hmm. It was going to be a serious battle, but I thought I had played a pretty strong game, whatever my game was.
So ultimately, Kellen is going to get voted out. It's going to be three votes for Kellen and three votes for Donathan. And Kellen's going to put her vote on Donathan. It looks like that Angela and Sebastian are sort of like looking to you on the tiebreak vote and you sort of like shrug. Did you kind of hang them out to dry a little bit on the revote? Like, were they looking for you to tell them what to do on the revote, or were they just confused about why it was a tie?
Yeah, I think that they were confused. Mm-hmm. They were confused, you know, at more than one point throughout the season. But I'm trying to think about that one. I'm trying to think about that.
Because it wasn't supposed to be a 3-3 tie in that moment.
Yeah, what exactly?
I think it was supposed to be a 3-2. And I'm not sure what exactly Donathan and Kellen were doing. But then Kellen ended up putting her vote on Donathan to force the 3-3-1.
Okay, well, yeah, I don't remember what I remember them looking confused. But I also thought there were times when Angela would look to me to figure out who to vote for. And yes. I think on the revote, one of us must have indicated to her that it was Kellen to vote for. Something like that. I don't know, Rob. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, I almost forgot to ask you about this big controversy here at the Final Seven Immunity Challenge, when it looks like that you have your slide puzzle done, but you do not end up calling out to Jeff Probst. You sort of just hold your arms out. And that's when Laurel sneaks in and wins immunity here on this round. And we're going to see. It looked like it was going to go to a booth review for a second, but it ultimately ended up where Jeff made the call that Laurel won immunity. And you didn't contest it here at this point. And I maintained at the time that there was some strategy in this on your part that you wanted to at least throw Laurel a bone here.
Absolutely, Rob. Absolutely. Had it been anyone else, I would have contested it. And I probably would have won the argument. But it was Laurel. We seemed pretty tight. She hadn't won anything. Like, she hadn't won individual immunity. Neither have I. But I felt like my day was coming as far as winning immunity. And I didn't want to be this big, angry guy. I wanted to, especially with it being Laurel of all people. You got to, like, choose your battles out there, man. And I wasn't going to take that moment from her. I think I said, like, hey, look, I finished first, but I think I said, like, hey, look, I finished first, but you called it out first, so you got it. Some people could say it's based on mental fatigue or anything like that, whatever the case was, or I could have been too cocky or something like that. Whatever the case was, I didn't get Probst's attention first, and she ended up getting the win. and Probst, you know, we had a little dialogue, but I didn't want to take that moment from Laurel. I said my piece. I was like, look, I finished first. You called it first. You got the win. But it kind of, you know, I wanted to win. I'm a competitor. But knowing that it was Laurel of all people, I was going to let her have that one. And had it been anyone else, even Dom, had it been anyone else, I would have argued it and I probably would have won the argument.
Let's go to that final six round, which has been the topic of so much conversation since the finale, where ultimately you will win immunity for the first time here at the final six. And so you are going to be safe for the vote. You have an idol. Dominic has an idol, and Dominic has a fake idol, but we're going to start to see some of the other players are feeling like, okay, we need to make our move. Sebastian has an extra vote at this point. He pulls aside Angela. He pulls aside Donathan and says, okay, let's go ahead and do this. And then we have where Angela is going to talk to Dominic and then say, hey, all right, I guess I should just tell you the whole thing. And there's a moment where you come back and it's Dominic's like, boy, I there's a lot of stuff going on I got to tell you about. What was your reaction to hearing about how the rest of the players were plotting to overthrow Dominic and call his bluff on this other idol?
Yeah, that day was, well, that moment, that hour, whatever, that half hour was kind of crazy because I was walking back and I felt good. I just won immunity. I'm feeling good. And I'm walking back and Dom is like running across camp. He runs up to me and he's like, Wendell, a lot just went on. Sebastian has an extra vote. He's going to play. He's trying to use it against me. He just starts telling me all this stuff. And I'm like, all right, cool. All right, we'll get Sebastian out of here. I think that was the plan. Like, all right, we're going to have to get Sebastian out of here. If he's going for you. I mean, we wanted to get Sebastian out of there because as much as people say that Sebastian, you know, whatever would happen if he got to the end, like a lot of people liked Sebastian. So like we were ready to go for this guy. But Angela, like, it could have been a good plan. Like, they could have made a real move on Dominic at that moment. And I could have made a real move on Dominic at that moment.
Yes.
But if there was ever a time for me to do it, that would have been the time. Or for me to flush his idol, that would have been the time. I knew what he was doing with his fake idol play.
Mm-hmm.
I whispered it to Sebastian a little bit, but I think Sebastian was so stunned at being called out and kind of – Sebastian was kind of in shock at Tribal. But yeah, if ever there was a time, that was the time to make a move on Dominic. But that was an ugly tribal. That was the tribal that shifted a lot of things as far as the way people looked at Dom and myself, the way people looked at Dom especially, because that's when he started making like some power moves against Donathan.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it wasn't the prettiest thing to watch.
Yes.
It wasn't the prettiest thing to sit through. And at that moment, Rob, like, I've been watching the Dom show for the last however many days. And I'm like, man, this guy's talking too much. He's just been showing too much. Let me finally do something in front of this jury. And that's a moment I regret when I started pulling out my idols and my fake idol and all that stuff, putting it on and saying things to Donathan. It's like, I didn't need to do that. And fortunately for my game, not for Dom's game, Dom was a little more harsh with the way he came across.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people really felt. They felt his harshness towards Donathan.
Yeah.
And that's a part of Survivor, Rob. Like, you have to understand, you got to know the jury. You got to know who's on the jury. You can't go too hard at these people if they're going to be the ones voting for you at the end. And I understand his move as far as creating a lot of smoke and mirrors so that his play of this fake idol would kind of, it's like, you got to do a lot. There has to be a lot of movement going on right now for this play to work. It was a brilliant play, if you ask me. But at the same time, it's like some of the things that were said were just a little, they just had a little sting to them that rubbed I guess definitely Donathan, definitely Sebastian, Kellen. It just rubbed people the wrong way.
Yeah, it was an incredible maneuver, but there was a lot of collateral damage, as you know, we've talked about in interviews with Kellen and Laurel, and Dominic himself did a fantastic job of explaining what he was thinking during that final six tribal council. If anybody hasn't listened to those interviews, for a lot more on that. But the question that I've gotten a lot for you specifically is, why not make a move on Dominic? Because ultimately it works out for you. It's this 5-5 tie. You ultimately get the win. But you, with an idol in your pocket and the immunity necklace, if you could get Dominic out of the game, it looks like that you are coasting to maybe a 10-0 victory in the final three if you can get Dominic out at this round.
Yeah, if there was ever a time to shoot at him, that was the time. And it probably would have made my trip to the end a lot easier. And in hindsight, seeing how then I won the next immunity, so that I would have been good going into the final four. And I don't know what would have happened with the final immunity with the stacking, but like I could have probably won that too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would have been my shot.
Yeah.
That would have been my shot. I decided not to take it. I thought about it a little bit, but I decided not to shoot that shot. I guess it was like, at that point, it was like my loyalty and me wanting to, I've said it more than one time, like I have people watching me, you know, I got little cousins, man. And I wanted to play at least this first time around. If I have another shot, you know, I might change my game up, but I kind of wanted to play a clean game this time, Rob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that that's not your game either, if we're talking about that particular move at the final six. I mean, I think that that is probably, as we're looking for these differences, as we're trying to parse between, you know, Wendell moves and Dominic moves, like that feels like a Dominic move, but I don't know if it feels like a Wendell move.
I agree.
It's not on brand.
Exactly.
All right. Well, going to the final five, you're going to win immunity here. And then ultimately, you're going to give this necklace to Laurel at that final five tribal council. I mean, how far in advance did you know that you were going to do that and give Laurel that necklace?
There, like throughout the day, you're talking to people and you're in your thoughts and you're thinking, man, Laurel is very strong and very smart. And she can go out there and win a challenge. She has won an immunity challenge. And like this person, you don't know if she's going to take her shot at you. So like I'm thinking like, man, I have individual immunity and I also have this idol. How could I play this idol? Do I want to save Donathan? Do I want to save Ange? Our target that night was Donathan. What would happen if I saved Donathan? Would that would just be someone that has been acting up around camp, getting rewarded. But I'd be putting Laurel on the jury, and that's probably a jury vote for me. Mm-hmm. But with Laurel, I'd played the whole game trying to show her that I wanted to go to the absolute end with her. Like I wanted to show unity out there. I wanted to go to the end with Laurel, and so finally, at some point throughout the day, I was like, this should be a no-brainer. Yeah, she's strong and she could do whatever, but I'm kind of strong. I can probably win things. So let me prove something to her finally, because she's always been second-guessing me the whole season. And I was just like, you know what? I'm going to play this for her, whether she gets a vote or whether she gets all the votes or no votes. I told her I'd protect her. This is at least one single night that I can show her that I'm protecting her. And that's why I played it for her.
And also, you have in the previous round where you end up taking Sebastian and Angela on the reward, and they also are votes that go for you in the end. Do you feel like that decisions like that really factored into how people voted for you on the jury, or do you feel like it was more because of a 39-day body of work?
I think it was the body of work, but I think like, they showed some of my good pieces, you know, like they showed some of the like bigger moments, but there were times that I really bonded with pretty much everyone that voted for me. Pretty much every single person, but especially the people that voted for me. So I think it was the body of work. But towards the end, you know, they want to show more strategic instances, and like bringing Sebastian and Angela on the food reward was definitely strategic. Mm-hmm. Whereas giving Sebastian a shell weeks earlier, that wasn't really strategy. That was, you know, friendship.
No, when you talk about, though, that, you know, you being a giver and you did all these different things for the people throughout the game, is that something that people can, you know, do intentionally for Survivor? Or is it the kind of thing where that if you don't have this in your personality by nature, you can't fake that for 39 days?
Yeah, people can try to fake it. But I can sense a genuine person when I meet them. And if I spend 39 days with them, like you're down to the bare minimum out there. Mm-hmm. And when you're put through such duress or whatever, the real you starts to show. And yeah. Some people get cranky, and some people are short with people, and some people retreat and don't want to talk to people. And my outlet was, I like to make cool stuff, and I like to joke around with people and be friendly with people, you know, that was what I did. So yes, you can fake it, and you can do things that you can only fake things, but for so long, the real you will show eventually.
Well, that's what I think is sort of the beauty of the game, is that it is such a marathon and the conditions are so hard that it does, you know, strip away all of these fake parts of your personality. And then ultimately what you're left with, I think, is sort of a very true version of yourself. And I think that is why the social game is so super important.
I agree. It's like there have been seasons where, like, the strategic threats have won the game. But there have been a lot of seasons where the players that have really honed and worked on and hammered down the social element, those players win. And that happens a lot. And fortunately, I'm a very social kind of person. I connect with people. So that helps in the game of Survivor. Like, that really helps.
Yeah.
And it won the game for me.
And I think it's almost a mistake that we always call it the social game. But I think that the game implies that it's something that you can control. And I think that you either, you know, have this, you know, personality and you have charisma, or you don't. I think it's very hard to, you know, have a social game, quote unquote, and then, you know, sort of, you know, be this different person that is very nice to people when that's not really your character in real life.
I agree with that. You can only put on a face for so long. And even if you fake it, it's like some people will read through that stuff. So like, you can act cool and friendly and whatever, but people will understand who you really are out there, especially out there.
Final four, we get to this fire making challenge. Dominic is going to win, and he has to make a decision of who he's going to take. You realize that it's not going to be you, right? There was no part of you that thought that maybe Dominic was going to say, okay, you know, Wendell was my buddy, I'll take him to the end.
No, he wasn't going to do that. I knew he wasn't going to do that. And
yes,
it might have been better. It might have been better for his game to do that or do some other things. But he wasn't going to do that.
Now, Laurel talked to me about how you built a fire making station for her to practice making fire. At what point did you start to think about this? Because you guys did not get to see Survivor 35 and, you know, how big of a factor that was going to be. So you must have had some idea that this was going to be a very important facet of the season.
Yeah. So we knew that at Final Four, there would be fire. That's all we knew. We didn't see it happen, but we knew that it was going to happen. So as the numbers dwindle, I'm thinking to myself, like, I know I'm good at making fire, but what about the people that I want to go to the end with? I know Dom's good at making fire. What happens if Laurel has to make fire? I want to help her as best I can. So I went far off into the woods. I built a little table for her. Because I didn't see the season 35 fire making challenge, I thought that we'd be standing behind some kind of table. I wanted to recreate what I thought would happen. So built a table so she'd stand behind it,
I left some flint, I left a machete and some other things. And I brought her back there a couple times and taught her. I showed her how to make fire. And then like a couple of days, I guess, or the day before Dom had to make the decision, whatever it was, I put my time in with Laurel, showing her how to make fire just in case.
Mm-hmm. Did you work with Angela at all?
Not so much. Nah. As much as I love Angela, my deal was with Laurel. So in the event that Laurel was going up against Angela at fire making, mm-hmm. I would want Laurel to win.
Okay. So if you won the final four immunity, would you have sent Laurel, who was, you know, your champion that you had been coaching, your protege in making the fire, would you have put her in to make fire against Dominic, or would you have you brought her?
No way. I would have brought Laurel. Like, I would kind of did the same thing that Dom did. Like, as much as you want to, I was very loyal to Laurel, and I wanted to sit at the end with Laurel, mm-hmm. period. So I would have probably showed Ange how to make fire and said good luck against Dom, and Dom would have beat her, and that wouldn't have looked great for me. I'm just being real. It's like, you want to say, you know what, I would take immunity off me, I'd put it on Laurel's neck, and I'd sit there and make fire against Dom, or I'd have Laurel make the tough decision, and she would probably bring Angela and force a Wendell and Dom fire-making challenge. Yeah, you want to say that stuff in hindsight, but in actuality, man, I want to guarantee my spot at least in front of the jury, first and foremost, and then I want to help whoever it is to beat my biggest competitor, which would have been Dom, so that I would have taken Laurel to the end with me.
Did you know when you were out there that Dominic was considering putting himself into the fire making challenge against you?
I think that when you're thinking of a player like Dom Abate, anything is within the realm of possibility. Like, this man is a player, man. This guy knows Survivor very well, and I think I knew that was a consideration of his, especially because we're so frank and candid with one another. But man, he wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
He wouldn't do it. Like, come on, Dom. Kristen would kill you if you did that, man. Like, let's be real.
I bet it would really catch you off guard, though.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You'd have the element of surprise going for him.
Yeah. The jury would be shocked. It would be awesome to watch. But nah, he ain't doing that, man. Come on.
Yeah. All right, so day 39 now, you're going to the final tribal council. Are you feeling really good heading into this? Do you feel like that you have this locked up, or do you think that this is going to be very contentious?
No, I didn't feel like I had it locked up. I started thinking about Dom's game, the big moves he made, the Dom show, you know, all the talking he did, the negotiating with props that he did. I just thought about everything. And I'm like, wow, this is not going to be easy. This is going to be a dogfight. Dom is like a salesperson, so he's going to be a big talker, and he's going to know everything to say. And yeah, it won't be easy. Straight up, it's going to be a fight.
Okay, so from what we saw on the show, we heard more of Dominic's case in the final tribal council, but the people who were there say that, you know, there were a lot of points in your favor that we didn't get to see from the final tribal council. Is there anything, I'm not sure if you've gone back and looked at it, was there anything that you felt like that you said that you wished would have made the final cut of the show?
I talked about certain connections I made with people. That's, you know, my social game. But I talked about, I think we said the vote. I think it was
split
the
vote.
Yeah, the split vote. I talked about that. And I was like, look, in that split vote, I think I said I made like six different moves in that one tribal. And I was like, I wanted to find out if Michael had an idol. I wanted Michael to go home. I wanted to create a rift between Laurel and Kellen. I wanted to re-up my relationship with Laura. Like, I had like bullets of the things that I accomplished in that one tribal from getting up and, you know, whispering to a couple people, and from Kellen sharing a little information an hour or whatever beforehand when she told me that she had an extra vote. And so I just wanted people to see, like, look, yeah, I built a lot of stuff out there and I was cool with everybody, but there was another aspect to my game and my head was working out there. And no, they didn't show that, because obviously they didn't even show it
when it happened, but I think that would have been cool to show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there anybody that you were surprised that they seemed to be not in your corner when you got, and of course that jury is split with the first five people going for Dominic and the second five people going for you?
Yeah, that was, there's a lot that can be said about the first five going for him and the second five going for me. And there's like, you know, you see him and Noble battling all season and you're like, all right, then that means Noble might vote for me. Noble fought with me. He saw how I competed in challenges. Maybe he'd vote for me. So I was a little shocked with that one. Libby, I thought that I was going to get her vote. I thought that her and I had a little like a better relationship out there. I helped her with a lot of stuff out there.
You built a pantry.
Built her pantry. Who else? Like these, the little gestures, I mean, they work for some people. They don't work for everybody. Mm-hmm. Or some people take them different ways, whatever. So Michael, he told me he was going to vote for me at the end. Now, in Final Tribal, I realized that there was no chance he was going to write my name down. But walking in there, I was like, all right, I might get Michael's vote. Donathan told me he would vote for Dom. So I'm like, all right, might not get Don's vote. Chelsea did a lot of work with Dom. You think that Dom might get her vote? Angela, I had like a few serious, deep, long conversations with her. I mean, like long conversations. And Dom had a lot of short conversations with her. And so that's like up in the air. It's like, who do you choose? Sebastian, I knew I was good with Sebastian. Absolutely. Kellen, I was pretty sure I was good with her the way she went out. And even when she was going out, I was like, Kellen, I feel close to you. Like we're friends. We're going to be friends outside of the game. So I felt like I was going to have her vote. It was just, you know, it was kind of a toss up.
Up is down. Down is up.
Yeah. You don't really know. Like Dom really thought he had Chelsea's vote.
Did you wish that you told Desiree that Kanye was better than Chance the Rapper?
Oh my goodness, Des. I didn't even think of her right now. Yeah, man. Like she was supposed to vote for me, man. Come on.
No.
We had the rap conversations. That means you got to vote for me for the million.
Honestly. No. Maybe Dominic likes Kanye.
Maybe he does. That's probably what happened, man. He was probably plotting and he was like, you know what? Des, let's be real. Kanye is one of the best. Chance is this new guy from Chicago. He's like a baby Kanye. I don't know what it was, but. You know, I don't know. And then you speculate what might have happened at Ponderosa. Mm-hmm. Who was talking to who? Was there a shift at a certain point? What if the jury was a smaller size? You start thinking everything. And, you know, ultimately, I am proud of the outcome. I thought we both played super strong games. We tied at the end. And it was kind of poetic, man.
Yeah. So, okay. Here comes Jeff Probst and he says, you know what? I am going to read the votes right here. And now, you know, as a longtime fan that they bring the votes back and they read them at the finale. So in you're sitting there. Can you talk us through how this is unfolding in your mind, ultimately realizing that Laurel is going to break this tie?
So, first of all, when he says, I'll read the votes. I'm like, in my head, I'm like, all right, this is Probst joking again because, you know, he knows how they're editing and he could say whatever and he knows that they'll edit whatever out. So I'm just like, man, he's joking. And because he said funny stuff or he's used profanity to us and we're just like, all right, that's going to be edited out. Mm-hmm. But maybe he's just saying it to lighten the mood because it was tense in there. But then he opens it and it's like, he reads Dominic, Wendell. Dominic. And I'm like, yo, he's really reading the books right now. So, like, I was like, and yeah, as soon as he starts going, you're like, wow, we know what this is. This has never happened. We know what it is. This is about to be a tie. So, and like you said, man, I know what happens in a tie. They announced it a few seasons ago. Mm-hmm. Dom knows what happens in a tie and Laurel knows what happens in a tie. So, you see my face and I'm sitting there next to Dom. I'm like, wow, Laurel's going to be the tiebreaker vote. Laurel got me. She got me. She got my back. But at the same time, I'm like, man, I just squeaked by this super survivor player. This like
man, Dom could win so many seasons. I'm like, in my head, I'm so happy knowing that it's about to be Laurel. So I'm smiling, I'm covering my face, but I'm like, man, I don't want to go too hard because I know Dom, first of all, you don't know 100% that she's going to vote for you, but you have a high degree of certainty. But you also know that this guy who you've been bonding with for so long, it just slipped out of his hands. So I'm not jumping up screaming and jumping for joy. I'm like covering my face. I'm smiling. My eyes are watering. And it was just like, wow, I'm in shock. I'm in shock. I played a hard game, but geez, I think I just did this. I think not only do I think I just did this, this is about to be history. Mm-hmm. We're about to be the first tie in Survivor history. So it's like the greatest feeling ever, man. It was surreal, and it was written all over my face, even though I was kind of like halfway covering my face.
So when Laurel goes into the booth, you said you have a high degree of certainty. Is it 99%? Is it slightly less?
It was like 90%.
90. Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't say 99, but I mean, maybe 80, 70%. It's like in the game of Survivor, you don't know, but you think about like, we cried on each other's shoulders. And
who did?
She shared things
you
with me.
And Laurel.
I shared things. Yeah. Me and Laurel. Dom ain't crying on my shoulders, man. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. But me and Laurel, like we shared a lot out there, and granted, like I think her and Dom might have slept around the fire together pretty much every night. And that says a lot. Like your sleeping arrangements say a lot about alliances and whatnot in Survivor, but like we had a different connection out there, and I felt pretty certain that she was gonna write my name down.
Okay. And she did, and you were the winner of Survivor Ghost Island. Wendell, I have some questions for you from the listeners of the podcast. Do you have some time for some questions?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And I want to thank you again that I know that you are not feeling 100% or even as good as 90% like when Laurel went into the voting booth. So I appreciate you taking all this time when you should probably be resting.
No problem at all. I'm here for you, Rob. And I just had to grab another Pellegrino and I'll be all right.
Okay. Pellegrino. Is that what winners drink, Pellegrino?
Winners usually drink Perrier, but this is all I have right now. So I'll stick with the Pellegrino.
Matt Stewart wants to know, Wendell, who do you think posed the biggest resistance to the Wen and Dom show throughout the whole cast? Was there one person that you felt like was sort of the person that might have been able to topple this whole thing?
I think Kellen could have toppled the whole thing. If we're talking like later in the game, I think Bradley and Kellen combo could have been a pretty scary force. I mean, this is all speculation because Bradley was out of there kind of early, but we had a very strong pre-merge. So like there were a lot of strong players that could have, if they squeaked through or if the tribes were divided differently to start, I think that there could have been a number of players that could have really posed big threats. But if we talk later in the game, definitely Kellen. If Kellen would have really linked up with Laurel, if they would have got that thing going, that could have been very scary.
Now, what was the time that you felt like you were in the most danger? That's what Dan Sinensky is asking, that you held on to your idol so many times, but was there one point that you came the closest to playing it?
Man. Well, I felt super vulnerable the first blindside when they voted Morgan out, the third vote out. When the Malolos kind of blindsided us, I felt very vulnerable there. And I felt like I was only fighting to make it through another episode at that point. But I guess, and the whole time Chris Noble was there, because me and Dom were side by side. And if Chris is shooting at Dom, I could have been collateral damage at any point. But later on in the game, I guess the Chelsea vote out, I was closest to getting voted out. I think I received 3 votes that night, mm-hmm. and I sat on my idol. So that was another very scary time.
Rebecca wants to know, did you reveal that you went to law school? Was that something you told the other players out there?
At one point, after the split votes, when Michael went home ultimately, and I had to whisper to Kellen and whisper to Laurel, when we got back, Laurel was kind of shook and upset. And she was, I was like,
I think I told her Kellen had an extra boat, and she ended up sleeping by the fire by herself. And I'm looking down there, and I'm like, man, that's my sister down there. She's by herself. She was just crying. And I sleep up in the bed every night. But, man, I don't like to see her this way. So I went down there, and we chatted for a little bit. And I just told her, like, look, this is another thing I want to open up to you about. I went to Penn Law, and I basically told her what brought me to where I am now. Mm-hmm. And I guess that was just something that kind of warmed her up at that moment. But Bradley has said, like, that I revealed to him on day three that I was an attorney, which couldn't be further from the truth. Like, when I was in law school, I think I was, like, working as judicial staff in the courts. And what I was saying out there was like, look, I was judicial staff, and I would like tell people the things that I do. But if you ask Bradley, then like clearly he knew it all, and I divulged that to him on the third day. I don't think that was true though. Love you, Bradley.
Jason Auric wants to ask you, can you explain about your decision to leave law and pursue your other passions after 7 years in higher ed at a Jewish nonprofit? He's shifting careers to pursue other passions and join his family's business like you did. And we'd love to hear that part of your story. So, you know, keeping on the theme of, you know, being a lawyer, what was that like for you to walk away from something that you had invested a lot of time in to pursue a passion?
For me, it was pretty liberating to like leave the law, but it was kind of a natural transition for me, because where I was, like, I was clerking for a judge in family court, and at that point I think I started making things for like making and selling things as like a side hustle. So I was doing this every, like, when I come home from work, I'd build stuff. On the weekends, I'd build stuff, and I'd love doing what I was doing, but then I didn't love so much being in court every day. And when my last judge retired, that provided me with the opportunity to do something that I've loved doing, and I'd already been doing for maybe a year or however long beforehand. So with me, it was something that was like in my heart. It was something that I've always been very creative. I've always been like entrepreneurial also. And for the opportunity to present itself when this side hustle had already been growing while I was working a real 9-to-5, like it was the time. And it's like, you got to jump at the opportunity when it presents itself. And I did that at the right time. So my advice to him would be, if it's in his heart and if it makes sense to go with your passion, then you should do it.
Could you talk to me a little bit more about what you do? Are you physically putting together furniture and beds for people, or are you just the designer and then there are other people who are putting all this stuff together?
All right. So I'll give a little shameless plug.
Please do. Look, it's not shameless. You know, 2.5 hours into talking.
Yeah. Yeah. It's only the patrons listening now anyway. So so basically, my company is called Beev. Beev is a childhood nickname of mine, BEVE. It's what my parents have been calling me and my close friends have been calling me forever. And
why?
I decided,
because you're like a beaver that you work with all this wood.
That's exactly why, Rob. They knew that
finally
when I was 1 years old, when I was 1 year old, they knew that I was a beaver and working with a lot of wood. So, no, I don't know how it was like somebody.
Oh, that wasn't it.
No, I don't know, man. No. It was from before I was even born. My parents didn't know what they were going to name me. I think my dad wanted to name me after my mother's father, and my mom wanted to name me after my dad. They didn't know what to name me, but some guy named Beavis worked where my mom worked, and they were just calling me Beav while I was in the womb. They were just calling me Beav. So that's Beav. Nothing to do with wood and any of that. So anyway, long story short, I started this company. It's on social media, on Instagram. It's Beav, BEVE Unlimited. And what I do is I build all kinds of furniture with some of my closest friends. We build bars, beds, tables, desks, what have you, whatever people order. We're actually there building and cutting and putting things together. out of reclaimed wood and out of barn wood. And so, yeah, that's what I do. These last few weeks have been a little tricky because of I've been ripping and running a lot. But that's what we do. We build custom furniture and design custom furniture.
And what does somebody comes to you and says, hey, I want a bed, and you work with them from scratch, or you have a couple of models that you are sort of your go-to?
They can Google images and send me photos of what they like. They can describe what they're thinking. However the client wants us to work, we work with the client. So a lot of times people will send me inspiration photos, but sometimes they'll give me like creative freedom and just say that they want, you know, a bed with a tall headboard and pendant lighting and whatever. And they'll give me freedom. So.
And what do you build it then in your shop and you bring it to a person, or you go, you build it there?
So it depends. Usually we'll build it in our shop and either someone will come get it. Like our beds, they come apart. It's the two side rails, the headboard and the footboard. Anyone can put that together. They can come get the piece or we can deliver it.
Okay.
So, and yeah, we've delivered all over the place. We've shipped to California. We got stuff in Chicago, Miami, Mother's Vineyard, all up and down the East Coast. Obviously we're based in Philadelphia, but, we have lots of pieces in Atlanta, DC, all over, man.
Congratulations on all your success, with that. I know that it is, not always the easiest thing in the world to, you know, have a non-traditional job.
Yeah. It's not the easiest. You have to be, you have to self-motivate. You have to wake up and make sure you're grinding. You have to market, you have to deliver. There's many hats that you have to wear, and it's not always the easiest thing, but it's very rewarding. And the life of an entrepreneur, it's not a 9-to-5, it's a 24-hour day, you know, 7-day-a-week kind of thing.
All right, Barry Johnson wants to know, how did it feel to officially win Survivor and have the Eagles win their first Super Bowl in the space of a couple of months?
And have Villanova win.
Yes. You wish it was all kind of more spaced out to sort of like hold you over for a couple of years?
Nah, I think Philly's the city of champions, man. I think now is our time. It felt great. My parents actually live in Villanova. So they won 2 years ago and I was ecstatic. And I was out in the streets with all these crazy college kids. And they won again. And the Eagles won. And the Sixers started doing a lot better. And then I'm on Survivor and, you know, I'm doing my thing in Survivor. It's like, I think it's a great time to be a Philadelphian right now. And I think that we're going to keep winning, man. I think it feels great.
Kristen Cole wants to know, what was the first large purchase you made after filming, but before Jeff declared you the winner, if anything?
The first large purchase I made.
And did you double check with Laurel before you made that purchase?
I purchased my shower curtain, man. People know this. My shower curtain. I got a Rihanna shower curtain. I found an awesome Rihanna image and I love Rihanna. This is my lady. So about, you know, maybe 8 or 9 weeks ago, I found this dope Rihanna image and I found a website that puts whatever image you give them on shower curtains. So I figured that I can have one tacky thing in my place. I'll have Rihanna in my, in the shower with me.
If you met Rihanna, is the move to tell her you have a Rihanna shower curtain or never tell her you have a Rihanna shower curtain?
Rihanna's going to have to see it for herself. Like,
If
I meet her, I can't just go there. Cause like even my phone, the background of my screen is Rihanna. So like, I can't go too hard. I can't overstimulate her with herself.
Wow.
So I just got to play it cool when I meet her. What's up, Riri? How you doing? Good to meet you.
She's a big listener.
Meet me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know she listens. Yeah. I'm just, you know, so as I was saying, Riri, it's good to meet you. And, you know, I won Survivor. I know you're recently single. So let's kick it.
This is a question from Valerie Fradiani, wants to know, who has better hair, you or Donald Glover? Do you get sick of the Donald Glover comparison?
Yeah, it's I've gotten compared to him for a while now. Donald Glover is like as talented as it gets. This guy is, you know, he's good at everything. And he seems like a super cool person. So it's like, I'm glad to be in a conversation with this guy. You know, I'm just happy to be associated at any point with this guy. My hair is probably a little nicer than his, but like, I've been hearing the Wendell and Donald, and they're calling me Grownish Gambino and all of that stuff. I've been hearing it for a while, but it's just like, you know, dude's amazingly talented. So
yes,
keep saying our names together.
Now, have you ever been stopped by anybody who thinks you are actually him?
That has not happened.
Okay. Would you sign an autograph if somebody asked you to?
Only if they're like a super fan of Donald Glover. I'm going to have to start working on my Donald Glover autograph, actually.
What if you met Rihanna and she thought that you were Donald Glover? Would you have to keep up the charade to tell her that you're Donald Glover?
That's the problem. I love her so much. So
this should be a movie.
Yeah. That's the problem. See, Rob, I didn't even think of this, but my friends would probably advise me to just keep acting like I'm Donald Glover so I could keep kicking it with Riri. But at some point I have to give her my last name. I have to let her know that I'm Wendell. Yeah. So we'll figure it out, Rob. We'll put our heads together.
All right. That's the, you know, the big, you know, start of the third act of the movie. When you tell her that you're Wendell Holland II.
Jeez, that could get tough, man.
I don't know how it's going to work out. All right. Matt Stewart wants to, did you ever listen to The Wandoffs?
For a while, I did.
Down, bro.
I did for a while. Like,
stop rapping. You're trash.
Listen, Rob, I did for like the first half of the season.
Oh, no.
So I probably didn't hear some of the better ones towards the end of the season. Yeah, so I need to revisit The Wandoffs.
All right. Andrew Shadlock wants to know, what Survivor alum was the most exciting for you to meet, and who are you still hoping to meet from past seasons?
Oh, man. The Survivor alum that I was most happy to meet, man, it was like my inspiration, my hero was Jeremy Collins.
Yes.
And I've been trying to meet this guy for months, man. Like, and I finally met this guy last night in Boston.
How was that? And I just saw him and Val down in DC at Steven's wedding. And he said that you guys were having a meetup in Boston. I'm on that. How was it?
Oh, it was so great, man. I ran up to him. He ran up to me. We gave each other a big hug. I said, thank you very much for winning me $1 million. And he was, cause like, yo, my game was modeled after his game. Like, this guy is, he's so great, man. And he's such a great person. He just, he has the biggest smile in the world. He makes you feel right at home. And I was ecstatic to meet him. I had to sit next to him the whole dinner. And like, I was like a little child, man. That's my guy. So, Jeremy Collins, he was always the number one person I wanted to meet. And then who do I want to meet?
Yeah.
I already met my guy, Bryce. Mm-hmm. That's my boy. I think it would be cool to meet Earl Cole. He was kind of from like a different era of Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Played in Fiji too.
Yeah. And he played in Fiji. I think Tyson, people say that he's hilarious. And I mean, on his seasons, I love to watch this guy. He seems super witty. He's a great Survivor player and winner. I think I'd love to meet him one day, Tyson.
Okay. Yeah. Boy, Wendell, you should have been at Fishback's wedding. I was with Jeremy and Tyson the whole time.
What's up with that Fishback? I know you're listening.
In all fairness, I don't know how long if he checks out these really long podcasts. Yeah. So how did you end up at Dr. Mike's house earlier this year?
Well, Dr. Mike likes communicating with a lot of people.
Wait, Dr. Mike Zahalski? This doesn't sound like the same Dr. Mike that I know.
If you didn't know, Rob, Dr. Mike likes to text people and call people.
Wendell.
And communicate with
Hey. What's happening?
I'm having some people over. Would you like to come down to my place in Florida? I don't do a good impression. You do a good one. So, I think that during his season, I might have sent him a message like, hey, Dr. Mike, I'm a big fan. And I think he blew me off or whatever. But then later down the line, I guess he saw that I happened to be a Survivor player also. And I think he reached back out. And however Dr. Mike does it, he probably has every single Survivor alum's phone number. But he starts texting me, and I told him that I think I was going to Florida for a trip, whatever. And he was like, you got to come stay at my place. And I did, and it was awesome. I got to meet Jay down there. Mm-hmm. We went rock climbing. Dr. Mike went rock climbing. He's that's my guy. That's my guy. He was texting me while we were talking on the podcast. I looked down at my phone.
Yeah.
And I saw the group chat. It's Dr. Mike, Joe Mena, Dominic, and myself. Wow. I didn't read it, but you know, he's a very communicative person, I'd say.
He loves the group chat. Sometimes it's like, wait, who are the people that are in this group chat? And sometimes it's like, all right, who's this person that I recognize the number?
Exactly. I had to use deductive reasoning to know that it was Joe Mena in the chat group with me, because Dr. Mike's talking about duos and how a certain duo is on The Amazing Race. And it's like, why aren't we? I'm like, Mike, man, hey. I don't know.
Alex Phillips wants to know, Wendell, what was your fondest memory of the season that didn't make the air?
Oh, fondest memory that didn't make the air. We had, I guess, at the reward challenge when me and Dom won that awesome challenge where we were running upstairs and dropping spindles down this crazy apparatus, mm-hmm. and catching them. We went to the Fijian village and we were able to kick it with like all the children and run around and play with them. And there was like an elder out there that we sat down and we ate with. And this guy, he had like a sense of humor. He was real cool. But he also reminded me, he looked just like my Uncle Larry, my mother's big brother. Mm-hmm. And it was just another one of those moments that brings you back home and you just feel so good. And this guy's funny. And my uncle is pretty hilarious. He's probably one of the funniest guys I know. So it was like, that was a very fond moment. And it brought me to a happy place.
Okay, Wendell, one last question for you. Andrea Raffle wants to know, how pumped up would you be for a know-it-alls in Philadelphia in 2019?
I think it needs to happen.
It
needs to happen, man. We got so many people out here. This is the city of champions. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about it, Rob. I'm just saying.
Okay. A lot of people, if there's a lot of buzz, we have to check it out. Oh, wait, John Densford wants to know, how would you approach a second time out? Would you only play if it's all winners?
The time, it just has to be right. When I got off the island, I was like, yeah, I'll go back out tomorrow. But when I think about things, it's like, I've seen winners go back out there and kind of like really tarnish their records. I've only seen one winner win twice.
Yeah.
So like, an all-winter season would be pretty enticing. And if there's another kind of season, everything, like, I'd have to be at the right place in life. Like, some big things shouldn't, you know, my business and everything would have to be, I'd have to be able to walk away from these things. Mm-hmm. So it would be cool to play again, but everything has to be right.
I would really like an all-winter season.
Would you?
That's the one that makes the most sense to me in terms of, if you're going to bring people back, why not do all winners?
I agree. It will be cool, man. We got some good winners. I know they're like waiting for a few more good winners or whatever.
What are we waiting for? Yeah. I mean, we have how many? We have 35 different winners.
I know. But isn't there speculation that they're waiting for a couple more lady winners or something? I don't know.
Well, you're not helping with that.
I know, man. I should have let someone else win. So the winners.
What is that what you're hearing, that we need more women winners? We don't have what, 9 or 10?
I think they need a couple more. That's the speculation. That's what Probst texted me the other day.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Psych.
Okay. Root for women winners in season 37 and 38.
I don't know what they're waiting for.
Okay. All right. Wendell Holland II. Do you have a hashtag that you want to give? I keep forgetting to do hashtags on these podcasts.
Hashtag, let's talk about your bed.
Let's talk about your bed, because we did talk about beds.
I like it.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about your bed. And what's next for you? You're finally back home, back to work now?
Man, back to work. Trying to find some like sense of normalcy out here. I know I still have a lot of like interviews and a little travel to do, and I have to get those things in order, but you know, get back to work, get back on my grind, and finally allow things to calm down a little bit and be me again.
Okay. All right. So follow at Wendell Holland. He is on Twitter. Is that the same on Instagram?
Yes, sir.
Or you want people to follow business?
They should follow both at Wendell Holland and at Beav Unlimited.
Okay.
On Instagram.
All right. Wendell, thank you so much for, you know, being so generous with your time. I know you're super busy right now, but I really appreciate you carving out a block for us. I guess that's your thing. You're carving, always carving something.
See what you did there. See what you did.
Yeah.
Rob, thank you so much, man. I've been sick. I wish I could have given you even more, but like, I think we did all right out here. Thank you so much for what you do.
You know where to find me whenever you want to talk about this crazy show. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Wendell, thank you so much.
Much appreciated.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Wendell Holland here on the podcast, and great to catch up with your winner of Survivor Ghost Island. Really appreciate Wendell spending so much time with us today. I know he was definitely under the weather on this call. A lot going on after this season when you end up being the winner. So thanks again to Wendell. All right, so we've got a lot coming up because we start to shift gears towards Big Brother 20. We should have some cast announcement news coming up early on next week. And of course, all the festivities that accompany that. We will still be doing plenty more about Survivor as well here on Rob Has a Podcast all summer long. So thank you guys for checking out this supersized interview. Of course, if you want even more Rob Has a Podcast, get all of the behind the scenes content, plus the invitation to join our patron calls, then go ahead and find out more. Let's talk about your Patreon at patreon.com/RHAP or robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thanks again for listening. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say on social media. I'm at Rob Sesternino. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.